Tonight on The Download, the week that was with Eitan McKaylee and Martha Bain, Dance for Life founder Keith Elliott, and The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. Now here's your host, the man who just duct taped his shoes, Justin Kaufman.
I had to duct tape my shoes. I don't know where you guys get that. I had to. They broke. And they were $15 boat shoes. You'll love this story, Pete. $15 boat shoes that I bought at the beginning of the summer. Actually, a little late, like maybe June, right? From the old DSW, no big deal. Thought I was really hip and cool with them, and then I realized the top of them, they were like canvas, the top, not the bottom, not the sole, but the actual top of it, my toe busted through. So like my toe is popping out of the canvas top of this boat shoe. So that being said, I went to the Target and I got myself their blue shoes. They're like little boat shoes.
Yeah.
So I went to the Target and I got myself some blue duct tape. And I cut a little piece, and I covered it up. And so it doesn't match, but it's better than seeing my big toe. And it's not going to stick. It's not going to hold. I wore them yesterday at the Cubs game, and the tape made it all the way through. And then this morning when I put them on, the tape like just peeled off.
Maybe you should just color your toe blue.
That's a possibility. There's a lot of possibilities. That, tonight, is the big question on The Download. 4 hours of what should I do with my boat shoes? It is kind of funny. My wife was like, "You're an idiot," and I was like, "Or am I a genius? Am I a shoe genius that no one recognized?" So you be the judge. 312-981-7200. Am I an idiot for putting duct tape on the top of my boat shoe? It's really a boat shoe. I should take a picture of it.
Yeah, take a picture of that.
They're at home, but I did take a piece. Like I cut. The best part is the shoes were, like I said, they were $15 to $20. The duct tape, the roll was like $9. So, like, I probably could just go tomorrow back to the DSW or to the Kmart or the Target or whatever and just get a pair to beat out the summer.
I'm sure, yeah, they're trying to get rid of boat shoes now, probably, because they're getting
room for the fall stuff. But, you know, it's principle. I shouldn't have these shoes should not be busted in this way. It's not that I have, like, jagged toenails or that, you know, I did something wrong.
Yeah.
They just are poorly constructed, like the actual top canvas part, just poorly constructed. And it makes me look real kind of junky in the way that I'm walking down with my toe sticking out of this shoe. But I'm telling you, I came up with a solution. I spent probably about 15 minutes cutting the piece of duct tape the exact way it needed to fit, like I was a carpenter, like I was a contractor for shoes. And I taped it on. It didn't tape very well, but I put my palm, I held it down for like 5 minutes, and it worked.
Yeah, see, I don't know what makes you look more like a popper is the actual hole or the duct tape. I think both.
The idea being that if you looked down and you saw a discolored or off-colored blue, you would go, okay. But if you looked down and you saw that sort of fleshy white, you would be like, huh.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going for. You know, what I'm trying to do is just, it's just sleight of hand with my shoes. So I don't know. That is the topic of conversation tonight. 815 right off the bat. See, the calls are coming in. This is going to be a good night. I got a good feeling. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are with you until 11 o'clock. But I am telling you right away, 815, tape from the inside.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Genius.
But then I would have the tape on my toe.
Oh, I guess you need...
You're going to have to figure that out. I was also thinking about, there was a point where I was like, I don't really care about style because it's a blue canvas shoe with the white sole. So it kind of, but I was thinking about just wrapping the shoe, like as a football player, like just wrap it. Just wrap it with blue duct tape. And then people are like, look at how awful that looks, because it would just look awful. But we'd be like, hey, man, I'm an athlete. What can I say? You know?
Yeah, I guess you'd have to, like, you tape it, you know, in the inside. So the top, you know, the blue is, and then on the bottom of that, you know, tape it, oh, you know, under it. So it's like two-sided tape, sort of.
It's a very Martha Stewart question, and the phones have lit up.
I know, I'm going to answer a couple.
That's really great that the phones have lit up over my
impromptu talk of duct taping my shoe. This was not on the agenda. I did no research tonight for this segment. I should have. Maybe we shouldn't have booked things for tonight, and I just talk about my shoe and duct tape, and that would be more. It'd be much easier radio, I'll tell you that. Keith Elliott's with us tonight. Keith Elliott is a longtime dancer in Chicago, and he is the founder. Back in 1992, he founded Dance for Life, which is a fundraiser for the dance community to help those afflicted with HIV and AIDS and other life-threatening illnesses. 25 years later, it's still going strong. They raise about $300,000-plus each year for HIV AIDS awareness. We'll talk with Keith Elliott about why it's so important for the dance community in Chicago. It's an interesting community because a lot of dancers, whether you're at the Joffrey or whether you're in an off-loop theater company in the storefront, you know, you work really hard and there's not a lot of pay. There's not a lot of health insurance. It really is a passion play for a lot of artists to be a dancer. You're not in it for the payoff. So, so we'll talk with Keith about life as a dancer and the 25th anniversary of Dance for Life. Tonight we'll also do the frying pan. It's back, everybody. Are you excited? I'm excited. Steve Gatlin is back. He's got a new invention, new innovation tonight. We'll do that after 10 o'clock. It's been a couple weeks, so he'll be back tonight. I'm excited. I'll bet you he's got a great idea. He usually comes out strong after he has a couple weeks off. I'm telling you, every which way I'm getting texts and calls. People are calling in about this duct tape issue. Let me just take one, okay? Let me take Sue. Sue, what should I do about my boat shoes?
Hey, man. Thank you for taking my call.
You're the winner.
Long-time GN listener. Thank you. Woohoo! You know what? It's near the end of the season, so I'm like that, and I've had issues like this where I like found, you know, you can find all these different colors of duct tape and so on, and I'm like, my friends are going to be like, oh my goodness. But all I can tell you and the listeners is I've played this long where I'm like, hey, I can duct tape the thing together and no one will really notice. And you know what? I used to worry and be all afraid about it. But you know what? I'm sorry to say or whatever. A lot of people don't notice. Yeah. And we can make it through to the next season.
Yes, Sue, you and I are kindred spirits.
Thank
we're duct
you,
tape
Justin.
Kindred spirits. I appreciate the call.
Woo!
Thank you very much. So yeah, maybe I'm not that off. Someone said you got ripped off on the duct tape. I did get ripped off on the duct tape. I did not go. They said you can get it for $3 at Walmart. Although I would push back on that because you had to get a certain color. Colors will be more. If you just get the standard gray, you're right. That's probably, you can get that pretty cheap. But what I had to do is get like go to the art supply area, you know, to get the colored duct tape to match the shoe. So many more. Well, you know what? We'll just keep this going throughout the show. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight. I think Badish is in on Friday nights as well. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll do the carry out. Stay with us. There's a lot of great texts coming in about the duct tape. We'll get to them after the carry out. Of course, the carry out, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. It's the Air and Water Show. It's here this weekend, so Chicagoans, get ready to have all your conversations interrupted by this. Is he gone? Good. Donald Trump accepted the resignation of campaign chief Paul Manafort today. This after a lot of things. But the latest was his ties to a lobbying effort by a pro-Russian Ukrainian government, which I guess is frowned upon when running a campaign for president. Who knew? I mean, it depends. Were the Russians in question more like Rocky IV Russians or more like Yakov Smirnov Russians? I mean, which caricature are we talking about here? It makes a difference. The Chicago police have been arresting gangbangers at select hidden locations, mostly surrounding drug transactions. So if you are a gangbanger and you're selling drugs, I'd be wary of the guy with the backwards Cubs hat saying, "Drugs? Anyone? Anyone got drugs? Hey, bud, can I get some drugs?" It's probably a cop.
The Navy SEAL member who broke the code of silence to write the story of the capture of Osama bin Laden has been threatened jail, but now the feds are just demanding cash. And he's agreed to pay over $6 million in fines for telling the story of the fateful night. I guess he can because, I mean, he made more than that with books and movie sales. So lessons to all of you out there, if you got money, you can do anything. Apple and Google join forces to crack down on robocalls. This, of course, automated robot-like calls from scammers and politicians. Or wait, is it politicians and scammers? It's one of those. When asked for comment, the robot was like, "This is total bull, so I can't make phone calls. Last I checked, this is a free country. Also, you owe money to the IRS." A new study. There it is. Sure. Pass. A new study says that the rich have pretty much recovered all of their assets from the great 2008 recession, but the middle class and poor haven't even started. And that the top 10% owns 3/4 of the world's wealth. I'm not really good at math, but let's try 10 divided by 3/4 and force the fraction 4 to 2, carry the 1. Oh, that's bogus. That answer is bogus, right? I think I got it. Do I get any extra credit for creativity, showing my work? NASA astronauts successfully installed a space docking port at the International Space Station. I wonder if at any time the astronaut was like, "You know what? Who did this before? This is just messed up. You know what? I'm going to run to the Space Ace Hardware. Maybe I got something in my back of my shuttle. Let me check. It's going to take a while." Okay. Space mechanics. The greatest. The CDC warns that misusing your contact lenses could cause serious eye damage. So if you wear them past the recommended expiration date or sleep in them or, I don't know, keep them in your pocket, that could be bad news. Upon hearing this, everybody who wears contact lenses gulped loudly. Recommended expiration date. I thought that was just recommended. I mean, I thought that's corporate speak, you know, for you need to buy more and more. You know, the 1% eye doctors, man. No justice, no peace. Trying to take our eyes. Ow, my eyes hurt. Kanye West is creating pop-up stores around the country for his Life of Pablo fashion line, and there will be one in Northbrook. Chicagoans are miffed, but Kanye's not dumb. He's not selling Life of Pablo slippers at $200 to just anyone. He's selling Life of Pablo slippers at $200 to the North Shore. North Shore? Mom, I gotta have those slippers. That's the same slipper that Kris Jenner wears. Oh, I could get 2 for $400? In weather, rainy, thundery, hot. I think the weekend's going to be nice, though. But again, you know what? I never check the weather. In sports, the Bears lost their second preseason game by a point, but the score doesn't matter. Cutler played okay. Offense played okay. I think the defense played okay. C pluses all around. You get a C plus. You get a C plus. The big problem, though, was that corner Kyle Fuller didn't play, and he'll be out for the remainder of the preseason. Antonio Cromartie was at Halas Hall today. The cornerback has a gazillion kids and could be an insurance policy. Seriously, he has like 20 kids. It's pretty amazing. At least we wouldn't have a shortage of ball boys, right? The much-hyped U.S.-Spain basketball semifinal at the Olympics was a bit of a dud. Although Spain did keep it close, it never really was in doubt. The U.S. team moves to the gold medal game. The gold medal game sounds like an off-season charity event played by high school seniors. Hey, he was a standout at the gold medal game. Maybe he'll get drafted. The Cubs are in Colorado, as expected. Big country, John Lackey, hits the DL today. Also, Hector Rondon, as well. But you know what? This is really just about rest. A couple of pitchers have been called up in their place. Tonight, the Cubs throw the calculator. Kyle Hendricks, Cy Young. The Sox lost again last night in Cleveland, so the rally, let's talk about it, starts now. Tonight. It starts tonight. They got the A's at the cell. James Shields on the mound for that one, so... it's probably just going to be 8-0 by the second inning. It's just how James Shields operates. The Blackhawks were going hard after free agent Jimmy Vesey, but guess what? He's a New York Ranger. Ugh. The Hawks really wanted him. They sent Patrick Kane to woo him. So I guess the, I know all the door guys at the Hubbard Street Club strategy didn't really work to get him here. Bro, I can get you in this club. We can go in this club. We can go in this club. It's going to be sweet. That didn't work. All right. And finally tonight, Midway Airport. Heard you loud and clear. You want improvements and renovations to your favorite airport? Check. Which is why they put in a new bathroom for your pets. No word on whether or not your pets touched anything in there. Poor dog. So hard to figure out those automatic faucets, their little paws. Don't get them started on the toilet covers. Well, that's the carryout. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly how it's going to go. You know it is. All weekend long. Coming up, the week that was here on The Download, Martha Bain and Eitan McKaylee are going to be here. So stick around. It's a download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you? Busy weekend in Chicago this weekend. They're leaving. They're going. They're headed east.
That's what it's going to be all weekend long.
It's so true, man.
It's so true.
It's a love hate thing because I like the sound.
Yeah, right.
You know?
But it always picks up right when you're like, oh, you know, I want to tell you that really important thing. Oh, yeah. Let me be quiet for 30 seconds. Yeah.
You know, we really need to talk about our son.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about our relationship. All right. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coppin. Well, big week in the news. That's what we look at tonight. The week that was. So many great news stories. Last week, we kind of kicked around a new segment, The Week That Was, here on The Download. And we're going to keep it up tonight. Two esteemed professionals in studio with us to help us understand what this week will be remembered for. Martha Bain, she's the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, as well as a freelance journalist here in town, former editor at The Reader. Good to see you, Martha.
Good to see you, Justin.
And Eitan McKaylee. Hey, Eitan, how are you? Good to see you. The author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America, also a journalist here in town. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
All right. So, you know, like, to just to get the listeners up to speed, you're involved in this as well. 312-981-7200. Feel free to play along. You can text. You can call. We'll go through some categories, like what was the biggest story of the week? What was the most overreported? What was the most underreported? We'll also do winners and losers. What story sucked you down the old internet rabbit hole this week? And, of course, what story will we remember from this week in 50 years, 100 years, or 500 years from now when it's all in our heads, when it's all Google Glass, right? So why don't we start with the biggest story of the week? Eitan, why don't you kick us off? What do you think was the biggest story of this week?
Well, the biggest story overall has got to be the continuing implosion of the Republican nominee Donald Trump's political campaign for president. Yeah, I think so, because it's unprecedented to have this kind of a meltdown in a political campaign, just as it's unprecedented in a lot of ways for Trump to exist as a media-driven candidate in a Twitter-driven age, I think everything there is fresh.
I felt last week was probably one of the worst weeks of his campaign. This week, he righted the ship in a way. He got rid of Paul Manafort. He changed up his staff. Today, you saw him in a very strong speech. If you know, a lot of people will find it to be somewhat controversial, saying, "African Americans, what do you have to lose? It's not going so well under the Democrats. Why don't you come over here?" His ratings among African Americans is probably the lowest in the history of low. So it's surprising that he would spend that much time trying to court a minority community that shows no interest.
Well, he did two things this week, okay? One of them kind of more in the direction of where he had been going, hiring Steve Bannon from Breitbart News, the alt-right website that some would describe as a prevarication-based website. But He also hired Kellyanne Conway, who is a hyper competent pollster with a lot of experience and the first woman to run a GOP presidential campaign. So she's formidable. And the apology kind of that you saw from Trump yesterday, the appeal to African Americans, which is really an appeal to white voters saying, I'm not that racist. That's Kellyanne. And that needs to be
interesting. I guess I didn't even think about that. But the new campaign staff, you're going to see a different tone from Donald Trump.
Yeah, except it's completely schizophrenic because he's hiring Steve Cannon on one hand and also trying to court the very, very small percentage of African-American voters who might actually vaguely consider voting for him. But hiring Steve Cannon, to me, I mean, that was my big story of the week, too. It was, like, it's just hands down. It's sending such a clear message about what direction the campaign is going to take from now on. He's really saying to the base, to the Republican old-liners, that, you know what, sorry, guys, but you're stuck with me, and now I'm going to go in this direction with these crazy kids and racists and whatever.
Yeah, I'll play devil's advocate only in the sense that, you know, he's been so... he's said such bad things over the last month. I mean, just the things where you're just like, I can't believe, and not even a presidential candidate, anyone who has a microphone in their face is saying it. And in the last 2 days, I've seen him take a different tone.
Yeah.
Where he came out and he said, listen, I make a lot of mistakes when I talk. You know, at least I tell the truth and I make mistakes. Hillary Clinton doesn't. All right. Blah, blah, blah. And then on the second end, this idea of like the idea of appealing to the African-American community, saying, what do you got to lose? You know, there might be some truth in there, as African-American community has seen better days when it comes to
strategy.
Political. Yeah. Well, I don't think he's going to get the votes, but it might appeal in some way that he is not as bad of a guy as everybody thinks.
It's always Jim Edgar, the former governor of Illinois, once told me, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase, but he said, basically, if you aren't racist and ask for African American votes, you can get 20% of the African American electorate. And maybe more than that, communicate to a broader, more tolerant white electorate that doesn't want you to be racist. So both of those are kind of wins. And I think, Trump has to be considered formidable. He did win the GOP nomination. He is a master of the Twitterverse. I mean, he knows what he's doing in a kind of modern media environment. So I wouldn't write him off yet, but I totally agree with Martha. Schizophrenic.
Okay, yeah. So my choice for the biggest story, because Trump is just, I can't do it anymore. The move to fire 7 police officers involved in Laquan McDonald's shooting and cover-up, I think is a big move, because that to me is the biggest story in my mind, because I feel like it shows a vast departure for the Chicago Police Department, or at least what we can expect from the police departments moving forward.
There's so much going on there, too. It's a move that wouldn't have been done even a couple of years ago. It's seems to have been greeted with a lot of enthusiasm from the city at large. And it also seems to be like there are others in the works, right? There are other cases that are now being brought up in which the lame duck IPRA is trying to
do something, which is strange. And then the whole Paul McNeil thing, which they just released the autopsy results.
Paul O'Neill, like, the kid
yesterday?
Who was on, yeah.
The autopsy results came out yesterday. Right. So confirming what everybody already knew, but that he was shot in the back. And I thought I was thinking that it was an interesting week for the police department, but I felt like that was didn't kind of release to general silence.
Yeah, maybe.
Like there was not a lot of...
It's
maybe
so
I'm
true,
over...
and I wonder if... And we got to take a break, but I wonder if there's something to that. Now that the public can get at the videos, and we get to see it ourselves, that when autopsy reports or something else comes out that's after the fact that we've already seen with our own eyes, people aren't as interested in following up on a story.
But it does signal... It signals, in the context of the Laquan McDonald officers, I think that it signals that there's going to be more to hear about in that case as well.
Martha Bain, Eitan McHaley, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do a little bit more. We got to do what was the overreported, underreported, and winners and losers coming up here. 312-981-7200 if you want to get into the mix. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download. Justin Kaufman, Eitan Michaeli, Martha Bain in studio. We're doing the week that was, sort of going through the categories of biggest story, overreported, underreported. What was a story that you really got sucked down the rabbit hole on? That can happen a lot on Facebook, Twitter. And also, which story will be remembered from this week in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years from now? All right, so let's go to the overreported. Overreported story this week. Martha, what do you think?
Ryan Lochte. I'm so tired of Ryan Lochte. I mean, it's a...
He had to come up, right?
It's a great story. I mean, the Schadenfreude is irresistible.
Exactly.
But douchey bro acts like an idiot is not a story. It's just not a story. And so, and I also feel like he's, you know, obviously he feeds off of media attention and attention from anybody. So I feel like I just really sort of want his life to go be ruined quietly in private.
The problem I had with that story, I felt the same thing. Yeah. I think we'll all have overreported Ryan Lochte. You know, the thought pieces and the societal breakdowns of why Ryan Lochte gets this coverage and somebody else gets this coverage and white privilege. That's what made my head hurt, only because I'm like, this is all off a dumb swimmer. Like, I just felt at the end of the day like there was so much conscious discussion, robust thought pieces that were happening in this country for 2 days about the coverage of Ryan Lochte that I was just like, at the end of the day, it's a swimmer who kicked in a door.
Well, the one piece I was going to say that is important about this story is that Brazil, for all of its being maligned before the Olympics, performed pretty well, apparently, in creating an Olympic environment that was secure and safe and in which athletics happened without a whole lot of problems, actually without a lot of the doping that had taken place in a lot of prior Olympics. So they deserve some credit, and if they were a little... thin-skinned, let's say, about this particular incident.
You can understand why.
I mean,
the lead-up to the Olympics was like, everyone's going to get mugged.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone's going to get Zika.
Right.
Right.
And the favelas, apparently, like crime in the favelas surged. The gangs in the favelas took advantage, full advantage of the absence
of
police.
All the tourists.
Yeah.
The poverty tourists.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, I was going to
push back a little bit on that, because the other story from the Olympics that that I was kind of following was the Gabby Douglas story. And here you have
another
this,
one that's just like,
you know,
oh,
it's like
America.
And exactly. It's like, come on, America. So the contrast between the treatment of Ryan Lochte, who was saying like, boys will be boys. Give him a break. He worked really hard. And then all these people just putting the hammer down on poor Gabby Douglas for doing nothing but being black.
I got to say, it's this weird,
not friendly enough.
This weird Twitter fringe world we live in now, where anyone could say anything and then a newspaper can pull that out and put it in an article. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because I don't know one person. I mean, I live a sheltered life. I have friends. No one has a problem with Gabby Douglas not putting her hand over her heart. Nobody has a problem with that. And the idea that the media has made it to, that everybody has a problem with it, it's just, I don't know. That kind of stuff is so overreported.
And she is a kid. Like,
she's a kid.
Ryan Lochte is 32 or
exactly.
something. I mean, she's a kid and she got bullied on a national stage and it was just heartbreaking.
It
actually really broke my heart. So,
all right, so let's go to underreported. What do you got for underreported?
Well, underreported, I would say, is what's happening with Obamacare, which is, especially in Illinois. Illinois is kind of
a
bellwether
good one,
for
that's
it.
A good one.
There's a lot happening in terms of the people who are using the Obamacare marketplace to get insurance. So we're talking about middle-class professionals, newspaper people, writers, folks like that, who need to buy healthcare and have money to buy healthcare because lower-income people have been brought into Medicare, right, and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So these folks are increasingly facing obstacles not just to buy healthcare, but to get any kind of access to Northwestern, University of Chicago, with like the closure of Land of Lincoln.
I am one of those people. Land of Lincoln insurance.
Tell me
holder.
What's happening. I don't understand.
It's a nightmare.
So tell me
I'm actually in denial about the whole thing.
So if you're a middle income person, you buy healthcare and you don't get healthcare through your employer. You get healthcare through the marketplace.
Right, right.
You have a wide variety of choices, but those choices only include certain hospitals, certain doctors, certain groups of of folks. A few years ago, you could get a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan. You could get a couple of other plans that accessed all the hospitals, including the premium hospitals.
Mm-hmm. So including
Rush, including Northwestern, including...
So the insurance companies over time have said, that's not worth our time. We're removing ourselves from the public Obamacare, quote-unquote.
Or the hospitals have removed themselves.
Right.
They say, we're not going to deal with Blue Cross anymore.
And there's nothing that the American government can do about it.
Well, there is. The insurance regulators of each state have the authority to negotiate with all sides here. But in Illinois, and like many states that have Republican governors who appoint the regulators, you find that the regulators are not particularly aggressive in negotiating with any of the healthcare entities. So what's happened now is that with the closure of Land of Lincoln a couple of months ago, there's really no way for you as an independent person buying on the exchange to get to Northwestern or University of Chicago. If those were your doctors, you're out of luck.
That's amazing. That's a good one. That's one that I've seen because it was Aetna.
Aetna.
Who
I had Aetna before Land of Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing
I've just
that,
been
that's
on
what
this
story's about.
Wheel
they're
for
doing,
a long time. And
they're
it's,
doing the same thing. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's really really frustrating. I mean, even during the brief window, I only joined Land of Lincoln in January, and during that brief window, I only was able to use my insurance once, and that was at an emergency walk-in clinic that happened to take it. But I was unable to find a primary care physician in my network who wasn't in the far south suburbs who was taking patients. You know, luckily I'm a relatively healthy person, but I know I have other friends who have like chronic health conditions who are also in Land of Lincoln and are really suffering right now.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really
you're talking about over 100,000 people in the state of Illinois. And you have similar situations in states all over the country. Is there going to be a political cost for Democrats? Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be. I think the greater problem, though, is that it has ramifications throughout the economy. Again, these are all independent professionals, really. These are people who, if they can't get health care while they're running a magazine or something like that, they may end up taking a job somewhere and not doing that.
It defeats the purpose that they put the affordable care together for.
It limits creativity. It limits entrepreneurial development. It really limits economic development over hundreds of thousands of people in the country.
Eitan McKaley, Martha Bain in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll do Martha's underreported, and we'll pick it back up. 312-981-7200. If you're on the line, stay on. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Martha Bain. She's the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, also a freelance journalist here in town, as well as a former editor of the Chicago Reader.
Correct.
Royalty.
10 years ago.
I know, but
almost
still, it's royalty. I can't
point.
Believe it's been
okay.
Almost 10 years. Eitan McKaley is the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. He was a guest on the program here, and also he is also a journalist in town. We're talking about the week that was. Let's go to Steve, just because Steve's been holding on the line through the break. He wants to talk about our underreported story, which was the Affordable Care Act and how insurance companies are bailing on the Affordable Care Act. Steve, what's your experience?
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you, I just want to get everybody off the confusion train because, Martha, I'm with that Land of Lincoln, too, and I was told it was all over September 1st, okay? Then I call there and find out, no, they're not over until September 28th, okay? And then I'm told that if you're already with them, you stay with them and you don't have to worry about anything. Bottom line is it's all over September 28th.
Oh, yeah. See, that's part of the problem is the confusion around all these plans and so forth. And so, yeah, I agree, Steve.
Yeah, well, I used to have Blue Cross Blue Shield, but then like Martha said, my doctors don't take this, don't take that, don't take this. So I found this thing, and now, you know, I have Medicare coming in November, so I only have to find insurance for 1 month.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a big headache.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for that. That sums it up. I think you're right. It's on. There is a lot of headaches and a lot of confusion around.
And their messaging is not consistent. It's been very confusing. I thought I had until the end of the year. That could be a poor not reading my mail anymore. But
it's the way that it works is that you because Land of Lincoln is being shuttered. you have the option of not having health insurance for 2 months or 3 months, October, November, December.
Yes.
For 3 months, you may not have health insurance. You will still have to pay the tax penalty, but something right. else.
This is a segment that I need to get some people in here and do 2 hours on. Let's move on right now. Yeah. I hadn't got to your underreported story, Martha. What do you think's underreported this week?
So this question, when I started thinking about it, this sent me down a rabbit hole because because this whole question of like what is underreported these days. Like to this week, for example, you heard a lot of people saying that they didn't think that anybody was that no one was covering the flooding in Baton Rouge. Like the media is a media blackout. Nobody's covering the flooding in Baton Rouge. What's going on? You know what's wrong with the national media, et cetera, et cetera. And then I kind of got, somebody on Facebook somewhere was like, well, actually, here's this story, here's this story, here's this story. Here's the, it was a journalist, somebody at The Guardian was like, here are the stories that The Guardian has done. And I really, I just started thinking about that and I actually kind of got off track about like, what is it that makes a story underreported? Is a story, how do you quantify if a story is actually underreported or if it's just under attended to.
Yeah, right.
And you can say that about, you know, any number of other things. I mean, that was, you can say it about Bernie Sanders. You can say it about, in Chicago, the big one is Home and Square. Like, that's a whole, you know.
The West Side police facility,
And Freedom Square.
Yes, I had a long conversation with somebody about that who was trying to, you know, arguing that, it deserved to be covered more. And I was like,
I agree on that.
I do, too. I think
that there's a protest.
Not a breaking news story. And this is, I mean, I'm not a breaking news person, but I kind of weirdly understand the logic of why it's not being covered, like, in an aggressive way, because it's a larger, like, long arc story about kind of the contemporary civil rights movement. And about police brutality in Chicago in general, which is a very long arc story.
Maybe we could change it to like under-trending.
Under-trending stories, exactly. So all of which is to say, this is a huge sort of epistemological question for me. But my underreported story of the week, for lack of anything better, was the story that the state of Flint is no longer in a state of emergency. The city of Flint is no longer in a state of emergency. And what does that mean? Because nobody cares about Flint. I care about Flint because we just published a book about Flint. And I've been to Flint and I know some writers there. And I think the story is fascinating. It has huge regional ramifications. There is lead in Chicago. There is just a huge story that came out a couple days ago about lead levels in East Chicago in Indiana. There's lead in Baltimore. There's lead in Cleveland. This is a huge
it's also
story.
It's a nightmare scenario
for
America.
It's so not sexy.
Yeah.
Because it's not, there's no good visuals. You can only show so many photographs of glasses of dirty water and corroded pipes before people zone out. I mean, then there's just and there's no clear villains. I mean, the villain is the system. The villain is post-industrialization.
Well, you know, it's funny because doesn't it at the same time, it's, you know, the concept that news organizations are run by how many people are going to read their stuff. That's how you're seeing how even the Tribune Company is a digital company now. So the way that they're going to measure, so if they cover Flint and they do it every day and then they start to see the numbers of people click out that click through go down and go down and go down, they move on. And it's an interesting, weird kind of cyclical nightmare that we've created in our own, you know, the way that we consume news, that, you know, the reason it's underreported is because a lot of people don't want to click on it.
Right. And the Flint story was underreported when it was first breaking. And then there was sort of a couple month long window where all of a sudden everybody parachuted into Flint and wrote their stories and then left. And now with this sort of the formal state of emergency lifted, which essentially means that they no longer get federal funding for bottled water or for and all the other sort of mitigating strategies that have been put in place. It's actually not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. It makes it seem a headline that you're like, really, hey, all right, they're out of it.
It means the state's going to have to pay for all that now. Yeah,
and Michigan doesn't have any money. So anyway, so all that was my...
That's a good one.
That's my...
All right, so let's move on to winners and losers. Who do you got, Eitan, for winners?
Well, winners, I have to say, the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, has done a great job and is winning all sorts of I think, accolades for trying, if for nothing else. Strangely, I have to also at the same moment put Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, on the loser list.
That's right.
And it's strange because Mayor Emanuel, you know, when this all broke with Laquan McDonald, he basically told the public, look, I've got a long time to fix this. I've got 4 years until the next election, and I'm going to take some time and do this properly. And he is, you can't give him a lot of credit for the way that he ran the police department in his first term, but now he is following that plan. And you do see big changes, big shakeups, big
overhauls or moves, yeah.
Yeah, and you see other things happening. Similarly, like the Chicago Housing Authority has got a dynamic new leader, Chairman Jones, who's doing a great job. And is also
so there's some things that are happening in the city, and you could call winner to the department heads, but it's interesting, loser to the mayor. One of the reasons to say loser to the mayor is because he came out this week when pressed on the issue and said, oh, you know, there's a firewall between me and the superintendent. Look at the history of Chicago.
Yeah.
It's not my area. He makes the call. And so you're like, well, are you taking credit or not taking credit? To make it seem like he has nothing to do with the police at this point just seems to be he's again on the wrong side where Eddie Johnson's making these moves. He could have aligned himself with him and been like, you know, they both go to sort of like we're making a change. But he, in a weird way, just kind of steps away.
And somehow I think the trust is broken and people are just not willing to give him any credit for even when he – I mean, look, the guy didn't have any executive experience. Well, he was chief of staff at the White House, but he didn't get rave reviews. He wasn't there for very long. He came to run the city of Chicago with no experience as the chief executive of a large city or large government entity. He – did not do great in his first term, but you know you got to give somebody some time to learn the ropes. He may be doing that now. It just doesn't seem like the citizenry is going to give him the chance to do that.
To do that. Okay, Martha, what do you got for winners and losers?
For my winner, that was a hard time coming up with winners. Actually, my winner was Mother Jones,
okay.
The magazine,
oh, nice.
Because they are reaping the benefit of this huge story that they published 4 months ago about private prisons. And this announcement
Absolutely,
yesterday
yep.
that the federal right. government was going to sort of disengage itself from its contracts with the private prisons tied to
Mother Jones.
A lot of the reporting that they did in this
yeah.
huge 4 month long undercover investigation. It's a phenomenal story that people should read. And people should support independent journalism and all these other
yeah.
things. So they're having a little bit of a moment in the sun that is very, very rare for small nonprofit
That's great.
Independent news magazines.
And what about on the loser side? More losers.
So many losers. So many losers.
We need sound effects. We need like losers. Now it's time for the losers. Yeah. Make it like talk soup in
Gawker.
Here, you know? Yeah. That's an I had Gawker. Yeah.
Gawker. Gawker's a good one.
Gawker. Poor Gawker. And again, like I feel I've never been a huge Gawker fan, but it's chilling. The whole Gawker story is pretty chilling that a billionaire with a grudge can take down a multi-billion-dollar multi-platform media company.
That's the future.
Boom.
Yeah.
It's over.
And and that story is a chill. You're right.
Chilling
is the right word
yeah.
because for what you will with Gawker, they were a media empire. They have 5 or 6 websites, which will continue,
like
Deadspin, the Jezebels, the Gizmodos. But Gawker, you know, was really the poster child for a new digital media company.
Right.
They know it. All you old-timers up in the ivory towers, you don't get it. Gawker gets it. And then Gawker is undone by its own sort of hipness
mm-hmm.
in the way of, you know, publishing.
But it's undone in a very old-school way.
Yeah.
By a guy with a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's. I was just listening to a report about news stations, television stations, local television stations in Florida and how upset they are with the way that the Trump campaign and the associated Republican PACs have not been spending money this summer on the presidential campaign.
Oh, interesting.
And it was really occurring to me like how much our media landscape is shifting. I mean, if you take out medical ads, pharmaceutical ads, especially Cialis and Viagra ads, and political ads, does television just collapse? Do we end up with like no major networks anymore?
I'll tell you. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, when campaign season comes around, especially a presidential season, that's a payday for most media companies, because that's why. I mean, they just run those things. We act like, you know, oh, gosh, these candidates. But the media has something to do with it, too. They're like, keep bringing it. Keep bringing it. We love it. Yeah. Eitan McKaylee, Martha Bain, my guest tonight in the week that was. 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We will do the rabbit hole story and also what we can remember from this week and 5,100, 500 years from now. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffman. We're doing the week that was. 312-981-7200. Eitan McKaylee and Martha Bain in studio. We're doing winners and losers. We're about to move on to what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. I'll throw in a couple I've got here that I thought were interesting. Back to the overreported. I thought that the Cubs DJ getting fired for playing the Prodigy while Aroldis Chapman came to the mound was an overreported story. This is, of course, a story where that song, certain song from 1999, Smack My B Up, was played in a when Aroldis Chapman, who was suspended for 30 games for domestic violence at the beginning of the season, came to the mound. There was someone noticed it. Someone put it on Twitter. It blew up. It was a big story. ESPN had it. It took 10 seconds for the Cubs to be like, that DJ is fired. There's no place for that in Cubs organization. What's not told about that story, which I think is the way that media works today, is it was part of a package that they put on the scoreboard and they show clips. It had nothing to do. The DJ didn't cue it up to play when Aroldis Chapman walked on the field. They've been playing it for 4 months at Wrigley Field. They've been playing it as part of a bat. Like, it didn't matter, but because they went and hired a guy with a domestic violence background, now it means something. And then that's why the Cubs would say, well, he shouldn't have put it in that song in a montage anyway. Mm. I just thought it was, again, simplifying a story that I feel bad for the DJ who didn't go out of his way to embarrass the Cubs or embarrass Aroldis Chapman and was thrown out of under the bus by a corporate baseball team that wants nothing to do with controversy.
I mean, he wasn't sending a message or anything. He was just picking some music.
He picked music 3 months ago before the guy was on the team. So it's not he's not making a statement. Yeah. He's not doing anything, and it just felt like we in the media, we were all like, look at he, you know, they wanted it to be like Wild Thing, like Charlie Sheen coming out of the bullpen, and this DJ's like, watch this, let me change the CD, everyone's gonna love this, press play. That's not what it was, and they made it to be that way, and the Cubs fired him for it, and he's out, and it kind of goes to show you about how the media can sort of spin a story.
Well, the only thing that surprises me is that it took a couple of months to track the song.
Nobody cared.
That's probably what the reality is, right? But you're in this age where access means that everything is going to be recognized and traced and measured according to some ethical standard. And when it comes to baseball, I mean, baseball was not historically a, you know, what we call a G or a PG rated
It's not
activity.
A PC sport.
No.
But I would push back a little bit because I just went to Wrigley Field for a game just yesterday. The songs that are played when the players come to bat, the songs that are played under the, you know, the Connie's Pizza ad when on the between innings, the song that's played when they hit home runs, Whoop There It Is off the Jock Jams. Watch the video for Whoop There It Is. It's a lot of jiggling butts. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of songs that are played at ballparks have different meanings outside the ballpark. And for me, that song, if you're familiar with Prodigy from the late 90s, which nobody is, it's an instrumental. And so it's a popular kind of instrumental that's played. You would be surprised how many times that song is played, the instrumental part, on commercials, on you know, popular TV, music, all this kind of stuff. It's a very popular instrumental. You'd recognize it. He's not playing the lyric part of it that everyone knows the song by. That in that package, it was just the instrumental. And so I agree with you, but I also feel like if you're going to go there, then it's like they hit a home run and they play Pat Benatar's "Hit Me with Your Best Shot." You know what? That's no good. You can't do it. That means something.
I mean, you know, rock and roll. You're if you're starting to to really analyze it, you're going to leave a very small percentage that's acceptable right. in terms of...
Girl, can we get much better? There's going to be a lot of edited songs at the ballpark, right?
There won't really be much left, you know?
So I thought that was interesting. I also thought that the story that nobody talked about, sort of an underreported or nobody talked about story, National Public Radio, NPR.org, the site that's a news site, they made a big decision this week to cut comments. They're yes. going to eliminate comments from their site, which used to be a big discourse, a place for people to react and talk about the stuff that was on their programs. And they've determined that I think the word was that it's lost its use, that it's lost its value, that there's a point in which it just becomes divisive and there's not much to be taken out of it.
I actually didn't know that NPR had done that, but they're following a growing trend of accelerating snowball. I mean, it seems like that's becoming more and more common. Is there, are people upset about this?
I think they are because NPR has a loyal following, and the loyal following is a very, well-read community. In a community that has thoughts, it's not unlike you'll see with the Atlantic or other mm-hmm. places where there's going to be some insightful conversation around the pieces that were aired, the stories, that the research, the investigations. And in this case, you know, they finally determined that that wasn't happening. And what there was the use for was to have this sort of robust conversation about the communities that were being talked about in the piece or what have you, and it just turned out not unlike everything else
it
on the
devolving.
Internet, just devolving into garbage.
Well, that's you know, there's a through line through this conversation tonight, right? We've been talking about shifts in the media landscape, and you've got something now where the whole anonymity of the internet, which is, you know, this fundamental right that people feel they have when it comes to the internet, but it doesn't really work. It's hard enough to like keep people civil on Facebook, where you are more or less known and identified, but where people are anonymous, it devolves so quickly into the most racist, insulting, mean-spirited conversation. I don't know anybody in their right mind who wants to participate in a you know, newspaper conversation.
It is gravitated to the it's almost migrated to Facebook. If the Tribune
That's
puts something up and
say.
Says,
I was just, wondering if there's a non. If there's actually just a practical business reason for doing it on that level, and that the conversation has moved to Facebook or Twitter or what have you. You post a story on Facebook, everybody comments in that thread in your own personal echo chamber.
I will say this. The one thing that is interesting is if you think about the business model, newspapers are recognizing that more and more people are probably gravitating to Facebook for that conversation. Facebook's getting those clicks, not the newspapers.
Yeah.
And so the newspapers realize that it's money to curate, it's money to edit, it's money to make sure that nobody's saying vile things on your website, and they want to just eliminate it. It's job that's being taken away.
I also wonder if a lot of sites have put in tried to implement strategies to kind of weed out the trolls. Mm-hmm. Where you make commenters register, you make them jump through X, Y, and Z hoop before they can actually post their comment. But what that does is weed out the people in the middle and leave only the extremists who are really motivated to go create their account so they can say their piece on the comment of the story, and it just pushes the conversation to the fringes. And the person was like, "I had a thought." But I'm going to go do something else. They're like, you know, they're gone.
I would let nobody know my thought because I don't want
to
be ripped apart.
No one would know my thought. So.
Martha Bain, Eitan McKaylee. Let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob Martier. It's Justin Kaufman. It's a download, 720 WG in Chicago. We're doing the week that was here on the download Friday nights throughout the summer. Martha Bain, the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, as well as a freelance journalist and the former editor of the Chicago Readers in studio with us. Eitan McKaylee is the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. Great book. We had a good conversation. You can find it if you Google WGN, Eitan, Defender.
The call comes up.
I only think in Google search terms.
Oh, man.
Like, I don't give URLs. I just give Google search terms.
Figure it out yourself.
Figure it out.
I appreciate it. I could see sales go up on the night of the show. So,
or at least search terms go up.
You're like, no, yeah. I get the Amazon sales, so I could see
look at that. Yeah. Huh? Well, it's a good book.
Power of the media.
All right. So, you know, we left with winners and losers, and we did over and under. So let's do what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. The internet is changing the way we even read the news. Obviously, you know, so many things that are shared and thrown at us. And then also at the same time, just so many, you know, follow-up stories and clicks. And I mean, Donald Trump's a great example of, I mean, it seems like every third post on social media is about Donald Trump. Eitan, what story did sort of took you down the rabbit hole this week?
Well, even though there was some progress on the police front, violence in Chicago is still out of control. There's something that has changed in the city, in the low-income African-American neighborhoods of the city, where gunfire is... I have an ongoing conversation with some of our mutual friends, Steve Rhodes and folks mm-hmm. like that, about whether it's worse or better than the 1990s or other periods of Chicago history. But all I can really say is that it's bad and it feels horrible and hopeless in a lot of these neighborhoods. It really feels like the resources have just been sucked out and there's just no hope for an entire generation of young people. And the result is horrible violence.
That's a rabbit hole too, because we had Sherry Runner from the Urban League on yesterday, and you know, you really can see it as almost like an ecosystem of one block after another. I mean, you can go trace it all the way back to closing middle schools. To the point where you get to high school and kids are not graduating, so they don't have the resume when they go to get into colleges or to go into an office job situation. So now what do? So now you're out on the streets. You got to figure out a way. So you get into the illegal trade, drugs. Then there's protection involved in that, where you're like, you got to protect your money that's coming in, and that's where you find so many different young African Americans dead. Because of essentially a trickle down from all of society. It's really interesting.
I covered the police beat in the 1990s for the Chicago Defender. There were over 1,000 homicides a year in the city. But what was different was that they were everywhere. That I remember going, taking the bus, given that it was the reporters' pay in those days. But I took the bus on North Milwaukee Avenue, southeast on North Milwaukee Avenue, and went from homicide to homicide. Now, these are all neighborhoods where if there's one or two homicides a year in these neighborhoods now, it makes the news. But back then, it was a regular occurrence.
It was spread out.
So we're getting a kind of concentrated type of violence. What sucked me down the rabbit hole was trying to figure out how to address it and what to even recommend to people, what to say on this show about what people should be doing or how they should be thinking about it.
Martha, what do you have for rabbit hole story?
Well, I just wanted to speak to that just for a second, because it goes back to this question of underreported stories. Which is just a little anecdote. Like earlier this week, I was in Englewood doing a freelance job, reporting on a little story at a church on 74th Street. And I was talking to the pastor there. And he was like, I refuse to listen to the mainstream media. I refuse to read the mainstream media. The mainstream media doesn't want to tell the story about what's actually going down here. All they want to talk about is guns. All they want to talk about is violence. They don't want to hear. They don't want to tell the story of all the things that we are trying to do to make the city better and to give our kids hope and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he was preaching, and it was pretty moving, actually. And I think that that's another way that you can look at the story in terms of how the, again, like the police beat is the police beat. It's like shooting to shooting to shooting to shooting. And there aren't often the resources to really pull back and look at structural and long-term and historic inequities in a daily media context.
Eitan, let me ask you, I being someone who covered both of you, I mean, covered Chicago at a different time, different decade, does some of it have to do essentially the same? We talk about through lines in the segment. Does it have to do with the idea that, you know, the bleeds, it leads? And we've seen that with the 10 o'clock news, and we've seen newspapers get into this business because when they write a story that says, 11 shot, 58 wounded. The click rate on that makes it the most popular story of the week. And so they realize that people want that, so they continue to give us that. It's a raised awareness about the issue of violence in Chicago, but it hasn't actually... Is it representative of what's really happening?
And it is news. It's something that happened, whereas church offers youth program to underprivileged children is not news,
right.
You know,
well,
by
right.
that metric.
I think yeah, there, all that is going on. There's also a kind of hands kind of being thrown in the air, like, what do we do? How do we deal with this problem, given that we have all these kind of assumptions about what the problem is and what is going on in those neighborhoods? It becomes very difficult to do what Martha just suggested, which is look at all the assets in the neighborhood, look at all the resources,
yeah.
look at all the people trying, you know?
That is a strategy for kind of trying to address it.
Right.
I got a press release today, and it was something that I was thinking about. And I'm like, well, we talked about it last night, Pete, the concept that there is a parade tomorrow in Inglewood that is a well-known back-to-school parade. It's not the Bug Billiken parade. It's a secondary one, but it's been going on for years. I read this whole story about this parade, and first time in my time, and I've worked in media for 20 years that I knew about the
Never
parade.
Heard of it.
You know, and it's a second, and it's really about Inglewood Pride, and they will say from the organizers say, we want the kids to know they have an alternative. We want to get them ready for school. That's not just about violence. But it, like you said, Martha, it doesn't, like for news editors and for people who work in news desks, that doesn't quantify as a news story.
And the other stuff has just been so defunded and
right.
under-resourced.
Right. Yeah, right. The features desk doesn't exist anymore.
Right. So anyway.
No, and you mentioned and the Inglewood Parade, the Billiken Parade you just mentioned. These are great examples of the kind of cohesion that really does exist in communities, in all Chicago communities, but especially in the African-American communities of the city. The Billiken Parade I know well because it was started by the Chicago Defender way back in the 1920s. But most people don't even know that. They just know it's the annual event that they go to the second Saturday of August on King Drive. This year was smaller. The budget was reduced. There was some controversy around it. There were still a couple hundred thousand people participating and being there without any incident that I know of.
Yeah. All right. So, Martha, what do you got for rabbit
okay,
hole
story? My own personal rabbit hole story was... was the Nate Parker story, which is really depressing, which is the story of the director of the Birth of a Nation, who the movie was sold for tons and tons of money at Sundance. It's like the celebrated big thing. It's all supposed to be a huge groundbreaking film that I was really excited to see, and I still want to see. But then all this news broke that he'd been, and it's been out in the world for a while, that he'd been accused of rape when he was in college. He was actually went to trial. It was acquitted. And then it came out this week that the woman who had been the victim in this situation had killed herself a couple years ago. Mm. So, and frankly, Nate Parker has not done a very good job in the...
Recently she killed herself, I
thought. 2012. Yeah. And the whole thing, this is my rabbit hole. Like, I was reading all the testimony that was online from the trial and from the witness who was there. And it was really, it just really upset me.
That's the kind of stuff of divorcing yourself between the art and the artist and it becoming much, much harder in this day and age.
And in this particular instance, it really speaks to this, because of who he is and what the film is, it really speaks to this, kind of the fundamental conundrum right now, which is like, which is the bigger problem in society? Is it racism or sexism? Or racism or misogyny?
Right.
And it's not like you should have to choose. We shouldn't have to choose.
Right.
But people do feel, if you're not gonna throw down on one side or the other, then it really forces you to kind of dig in into this very yucky, messy intersectional area that's hard, man. It's
my
hard.
Rabbit hole story is similar, is the Amy Schumer, Kurt Metzger.
Yes, that one too.
Yeah. You know, a story that is really difficult about a comedian in New York who was kicked out of a theater because victims came forward about sexual misconduct, rape. And Kurt Metzger, who's a writer for Amy Schumer's show, defended this guy. I mean, he didn't even know him, supposedly, but he just offended and he just kind of threw out, like, you know, with this lynch mob mentality we have now. It got so inflammatory. Everything was so riled up that they were going after Amy Schumer, saying, how could you hire this guy? Amy Schumer comes out, says he's a friend of mine, but, you know, I don't condone his behavior. But it almost becomes a story that Amy Schumer made a mistake. Right. And she's on Charlie Rose talking about, she canceled her tour around her book because she didn't want to talk about it. And I felt it to be very interesting the way that somehow this the light shines on Amy Schumer, a woman, because she had a writer who said some nasty things on the internet. I mean, I have a little understanding of comedy and comic shops and, and, you know, writer's rooms. A lot of jerks in comedy. But I'm surprised that so many people have put it on Amy Schumer. I thought that was strange that she's somehow accountable for this.
She somehow became the focus of people's outrage, even though she was at least three people removed from the actual incident.
And she had nothing to do with the incident, really.
Yeah, because she's the one with the name. I mean, she's...
Well, and we are in a kind of the Nate Parker story also brings up the same thing, where we're in this situation where we've decided as a society that we want to talk about sexual violence in a new way. We want to deal with it. We want it to stop. But we're not exactly sure who's committing it and under what circumstances. So you have kind of confusing messages, I think, where you have the White House coming out with the Department of Education under Arne Duncan, coming out with very strong rules and very strong statements, but still kind of leaving what's really sexual assault, a crime, in the domain of colleges and universities when it takes place among students. I find that very difficult to reconcile, frankly.
The only thing I could say about both of these cases that does raise, it brings it back into the forefront. Here comes school is about to start again.
Yeah.
I've done a couple stories around sexual assault on campuses where, I mean, that is rampant problem that schools, I mean, all the way, the big schools, you saw it with Baylor and Kenneth Starr having to resign essentially because they did a terrible job of just cover up and lying as opposed to dealing with something. And it seems like, you know, maybe this is a good thing, even though I just, in the case of Amy Schumer, I'm like, I don't understand how she became the ire of the internet over this thing. And it just perplexes me. I guess it's because she's a name. But otherwise, like, it's good that we're talking about it.
I could go there. It's because she's a woman.
Yeah.
But I don't.
And people. Yeah. Okay, if I had one takeaway from. We were talking about the RNC earlier off the air. If I had one takeaway from my trip to the RNC, it was that people still want to code their racism, but they are totally fine with being sexist right out in the open. And that was not anything. It was a huge shock to me, but it was disturbing,
you know. And I agree. I think it's this strange
she's
sexism.
A polarizing, outspoken,
yeah,
you know, brassy lady. People like to take those people down a peg.
I guess I'm just surprised that I can understand sexism on Twitter, and I can understand the way that it's kind of played out. I guess mainstream media asking her for quotes and putting in her position where she has to be a spokesperson for this, I felt was a little bit more over the line that I felt that that's where sexism reared its ugly head, where you're like, I get it, you want a quote from the famous person, but she doesn't know any of this. It's not her theater. It has nothing to do with her.
Right. And I think it was, she was being held to a very odd standard, not just a high standard.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap it up now. What story, all right, are we ready? This is the big question. What story are we going to remember from this week in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years? What's the story that made history?
Well, I'm going to go with a hypothetical, because it occurred to me, what would history say if Donald Trump was elected president of the United States? And it occurred to me, like, I really like to read, this won't surprise people who know my nerdy interests, but I really like to read Roman history and, like, Byzantine history and stuff like that. So I remember reading one particular bit of Byzantine history written by John Julius Norwich, who's one of these old British historians who's, like, you know, names, dates, you know, one or two details, next emperor, that kind of thing, right? And I remember just one mention of an Emperor Hugo, who the soldiers acclaimed, the Praetorian Guard acclaimed him to be the emperor, and it was a total disaster. The Turks contracted the empire by 50%. The economy shrank by more than that, and the empire was in stark decline for at least 300 years afterwards.
So that's you right. really took this yeah. question to heart. You're yes, going 100, 300, 500.
That's right. So I thought hundreds like so of hundreds of years from now, people will read it and be like, wow, why did they do that? That was a terrible idea. So
Donald
you know,
Trump's not wearing a toga. That's interesting. Martha, what do you got?
All right. Well, I was going to go back to lead, because lead is going to still be an issue in human bodies and in the pipes of our cities in 50 years, if not 500 years. But I'm going to go with the Uber self-driving car, just so I can get my Uber story on
the
air.
All right, quick.
Okay.
Do it.
So Uber announced that they're going to have a self-driving car.
Yep.
I was rear-ended by an Uber driver, hit and run, on Tuesday. Very, very mildly. Obviously, I'm fine.
I got a fat
lip, and I spilled coffee all over myself. And the Uber driver I pulled over, and he kind of went around me and kept driving. And at the time, I was irritated and cursing a blue streak. But later on, when I actually tried to just sort of do something about it, was when I got really, really angry.
Absolutely.
Because, and this is just my elevator pitch here. It's like lack of accountability is built into Uber's business model. There is actually no way for a member of the general public who has had an encounter with Uber, such as the one that I did, to file a complaint with them. You have to, their whole customer service is only set up for customers. You know, like you have to, yep. there's real, I mean, literally I've been doing this for a week or 4 days at this point. And I can only imagine how that lack of accountability is going to play out when we have robots driving our cars.
That's a huge story beyond that, because I would say, in general, you're seeing more and more businesses move to that model. You and I will share stories off air. I've got my washer dryer Sears repair, which is the same concept where they're like, it's Sears. No, it's not. There's nobody. Who's your boss? Right. Nobody's your boss. Like, you know, what is happening?
As we move towards era of increasing automation, who is the boss?
Who is liable?
Who is liable when the self-driving car rear-ends another driver?
Essentially, that's
on a public road.
Yeah. My story is a positive one. It's an Olympic story. It's not going to be Ryan Lochte. I think that will not last more than a month. We'll be like, Ryan who? I think Usain Bolt, the sprinter from Jamaica, who won all the gold medals again this week. And he did it in a way that he hasn't caused controversy. He's I don't know. There's something about him that he's a low-profile celebrity, and he's fun. And I think in 100 years, you look back and say, who was the fastest runner that's ever lived? And I think Bolt will be, instead of what it used to be, Carl Lewis. You know, it used to be other people. But Bolt has surpassed that, and he's done it in a way that he's been respectful. There's a great video going around where he's giving an interview, and then someone's on the podium, and they're playing the national anthem for the Americans. And he stops the interview there's just something about that in this day and age, and this week when we saw bad behavior from athletes, to see one from one that is excelling, I think Bolt will be
remembered.
He was
on my short list of winners actually.
He's literally
a winner. I mean.
And chemical enhancement free.
Yeah, right. So far.
Yeah.
So far, right. You got to put an asterisk next to everybody, right? Hey, Tom McKaylee, Martha Bain, thanks so much. It was so fun, you guys.
This is awesome.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming. And you got to come back sometime. We'll come back in the fall. Wow, disqualified, huh? There you go. That's going to do it. That's a bummer for the relay. We'll talk with Molly Green. She's back. She's fan jamming the Olympics tonight, coming up later in the hour. She watched the primetime Olympics tonight because we couldn't, because we're doing a show, and she lets us know what happened, what all the good stuff, what's the juicy stuff. I have a feeling. I mean, they gave it to her. Disqualification in the relay. Okay. Also coming up at 10 o'clock, you love him. He's back. Steve Gadlin, local entrepreneur and innovator. He won on the game show Shark Tank. He now brings his ideas to us before he brings them to his boss, Mark Cuban. He workshops them here. He doesn't have a lot of success. That's the problem. But he had 2 weeks off to think about it, and he is back, and he's been texting me the last couple days saying he's got one that everyone's going to love. So We'll judge it. Download Nation, get ready. 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200. Well, this weekend is the 25th anniversary for Dance for Life. It's a dance performance bringing together several Chicago companies to raise money and awareness for AIDS, HIV, and other life-threatening illnesses. The idea was the brainchild of Chicago dancer Keith Elliott. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, he put the first Dance for Life together to help pay for medical needs for his fellow dancers. Dancers are usually underpaid artists. When afflicted with life-threatening illnesses, they rarely have insurance or the money to pay for medical bills, especially at that time. Today, the fundraiser is going strong, raising anywhere between $250,000 to $300,000. This year's show's tomorrow night at the Auditorium Theater. Always a huge event, and this year, the 25th anniversary. Keith Elliott's one of the founders, and although he's not running day-to-day anymore, he's still heavily involved. He's my guest tonight. Keith, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Justin, thanks so much for having me here. I appreciate it.
I'm not kidding. I mean, this is the 25th year for this, but this is something that you started, you know, sort of shoestring, that has grown to something that is almost highly anticipated for the dance community.
It is. It's the anticipated summer event. It's a wonderful evening out. You can never catch all these dance companies together in one night like you can in Dance for Life. So it's a great evening.
So talk about, so that's the idea that you'll put together, what, 20, 25 companies that will come together from Chicago and they will all perform?
This year it'll be approximately eight different companies. Over the 25 years, we have presented over 36 professional
dance different companies come together and they perform mm-hmm. one sort of cutting from their...
A two-hour show.
Yeah.
In a two-hour evening, just jam-packed full of different styles of dance, ethnicities. It's a beautiful evening of dance.
So let's take it back to the 80s. I mean, you're a dancer and you were here in Chicago. You were dancing... And was it Holmes? Where were you at?
I was with Joseph Holmes. And yeah, once you're a dancer, you're always a dancer.
Right? Right, right.
I can't say I could do it anymore. Right. But God bless the young ones that can. But it's an art form that you have to practice every single day. But once it's in your heart, it's in your heart. But back then it was just... It was a little more devastating than it is now in terms of the reason that Dance for Life was started. Back then, in the late 80s, early 90s, there were many dancers just passing away at the drop of a hat.
I mean, you hear a lot about the theater communities being affected, you know, and mm-hmm. it's interesting to me because you don't think about the dance communities, but they also, I mean, that community was ravaged. I mean, you're right. People were dying left and right from HIV/AIDS.
They were. Back then, I remember the first year of Dance for Life. Wonderful evening. Never thinking that the event would sell out. We were at the Organic Theater. It used to be up in Wrigleyville, up on Clark near Addison. And it was just a 400-seat theater, and we were just all sweating bullets, thinking, we'll never sell this out. But I remember that evening, Todd Keach and I, Todd Keach helped me co-produce the first year. And we named off all the dancers that had passed from the dance companies. We wanted mm-hmm. to, you know, just honor them. And for every name we presented, we turned off a light, and the theater was dark by the end of it. And it was devastating, but it really put it into perspective.
Is that, I mean, for you, tell me how you got into dance, you know, because it wasn't something that was, that you, you know, thought about it. I was reading a bio of you of just, you know, you weren't taking dance classes as a kid. I mean, you were into it, but you got into it later.
I did. I started pretty late. I started when I was 26. So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm almost 60 now. So years fly by. But it was kind of on a fluke. I just happened to walk into a dance studio back in the early 80s, and it was Joseph Holmes Chicago Dance. Well, it was called Joseph Holmes Dance Theater then. Then they changed their name to Chicago Dance Theater, Joseph Holmes Chicago Dance Theater. Yeah, just walked in, and I don't know, I just instantly fell in love with it. I thought, oh, I can do this. But my background was judo. So I had some flexibility and ability, and at least the discipline to stay focused on it. But it was about the athleticism that I really liked. But that has propelled me into my life now, where now I manage health clubs out in California.
Okay. I mean, I'm fascinated by it because, you know, I always want to dig in when I have artists in studio about different scenes and different times. You know, when you came to Chicago and you started dancing with the Joseph Holmes Company or the mm-hmm. theater, what was the scene like for dancing here in Chicago, for dancers, for dance?
It was an exciting time. You know, now Chicago is really a mecca for dance. New York, Chicago, you think of the two side by side almost.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Back then, but it was an exciting time back then because a lot of different styles were being presented, modern and jazz, with the advent of River North back then presenting their very showy contemporary jazz style. Giordano back in the day, just... It was very vibrant then and still continues to be, but it's very well tuned now. I think it's fine tuned. There's a lot in Chicago in terms of dance now over then. But it's tough. It's a struggle for dance companies because there's never any money.
Well, was there money around in the 80s? Or, I mean, was it sort of shoestring, everyone just putting their passion on stage? I mean,
everybody putting their passion on stage. There were a few big dogs, like the company that I was with, Joseph Holmes Dance Theater at the time, and they were doing quite well. We had a year-round contract, 52 weeks. And then it was cut down, and you saw, as with the economy, you know, lessening, then, of course, our contracts did, and then finally the demise of the company after a while. But now that it's defunct, it's just too bad. It was a very, very sought-after company. Yeah, and it was a gram-based. It was a very strong technique.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That really was the beginning thoughts of Dance for Life, was when the contract did get pulled back and you had some time on your hands. As opposed to just every year having a 52-week contract, right?
Yeah, just hating to sit around and be bored. Putting this idea together, it really started a friend of mine, John Kamis, and Joe Seaman. We just wanted to activate the Chicago dance community in some way. So we just danced in the Gay Pride Parade back in the late 80s, and we called it Dancers United at that time. And so we got 61 dancers, and we all performed in the Gay Pride Parade. At that time, I was putting ideas together to create a dance event that would raise money, just kind of from my parents. That was a given from them. They were always in tune to volunteering and helping others. So that's really why Dance for Life started, because I took one of my passions, dance and volunteering, which my parents instilled in me. And create a dance for life.
Was, you know, going back to that time, I mean, the community, was it a connected community where everybody knew everybody? Or was it things like Dance for Life that kind of brought it together?
Dance for Life was an impetus for that. It really became a conduit for the dance community, for them really to join forces and come together. I marveled every single year standing backstage, and people who had never talked to one another before. You know, and you see the ballerinas sitting with the very contemporary, modern, just totally laughing and telling jokes and cheering each other on in the sidelines off stage. It was really a good thing to see. And for me, that really drove me every single year to see that.
Now, I mean, obviously the event's going strong, and we'll talk about the current show. But, you know, obviously with AIDS and the epidemic that was happening, even though the community wasn't connected, a lot of dancers were being affected by this, and that was something that brought the community together. Even before Dance for Life, there had to have been a point where dancers were like, "This is insane."
Yes, collectively, you could just feel the sadness in the Chicago dance community losing so many artists, bright, promising artists. That really pulled everyone together for this event. That's exactly what it was based upon, is, you know, us in Chicago, the dance community, coming together to raise money for those who can't afford. And out of that idea, 2 years after Dance for Life started in the early 90s, Harriet Ross and myself, we created a fund that supports the dance community, anyone in the professional dance community that at that time couldn't afford medications or doctors or last mm-hmm. flights home, bills, rent, and such. Now it's a little bit different. The fund has grown quite large, and we're funding anyone in the Chicago dance community, where before it used to be just dancers. But now we have paid for funerals through the fund and other needs.
How does that work? I mean, does someone have to go through an application process and things like that?
They do. You can do that right online at our website at danceforlifechicago.org. You can go there, or we also know everybody too, so they can just come to us and chat with us, and then we also go that route as well.
For you, I mean, as a dancer who wanted to do this in a couple weeks off because you didn't have the full 52-week contract anymore, to move to where you were even 10, 15, 20 years in, this became your job. This became, you know, the main thing. Talk about the transition from being a dancer, being an artist with an idea to, you know, to someone who was essentially running a big business that the dance community counted on.
It it was a huge learning curve in the very beginning. I knew nothing about putting things together yet very organized, which was a plus, of course, but just connecting with the dance company constantly, daily, until midnight, sometimes one in the morning, trying to get everyone involved. And it was just a huge effort to get a lot of people together, because quickly the wheels start turning. This started becoming a pretty big event, and it just took a lot of people breaking up the bits and pieces. So it allowed me just to really direct all those bits and pieces and making sure people are in place to run them. Everybody wanted to jump on board. Mm-hmm. And so that was not difficult. Everybody, especially in the dance community, is very, very giving here in Chicago. Were then and still are to this day. So it was tough for me just trying to learn. But there was the support of a lot of people.
Does it blow your mind 25 years?
Totally,
I mean,
totally,
to be at the Auditorium Theater thinking about the days at the Organic. I mean, there was a point, I'm sure, at 4 or 5 years where it just kept getting bigger and bigger, that you're like, there's going to be a plateau and it's going to go down, but it just keeps getting bigger.
It just keeps getting bigger. And I remember the year that it was Patty Eiler, who's on our board. Also, she's part of the committee this year as well. She presented us with an idea of possibly going to the Auditorium Theater. So Harriet Ross, a very dear friend of mine, who one of the honorary founding members of Dance for Life, she and I went and talked to Brett Batterson over at the Auditorium Theater, and we talked about the possibilities. And of course, it's a fundraiser, so you know they were helping us research ways that we could make it less. Mm-hmm. We also partner with the Chicago Dancing Festival as well, so typically they'll perform a week after us.
That's coming up,
and so we'll be able to share load in, load out. In terms of cost.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, the union's always very friendly to us as well. The theater, Auditorium Theater, is awesome. But I had such reservations that first year. Jeez. I was like, wait, that's a 4,000-seat house. There's no way. But right now we're at about 2,500 tickets.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And for you, I mean, to now be in California, yep. To be looking back on Chicago, when you think about the dance community here and you mm-hmm. think about how it's grown, how it's evolved, how it's become mm-hmm. more caring, how it's become mm-hmm. more connected.
Right.
What do you think of the community from afar, from a lens from outside? I mean, is it
well,
is it a
last night put it in perspective, if I can share with you, Justin. Mm-hmm. Last night we had a viewing party for our finale work. Our finale work is being choreographed by Randy Duncan. And Randy Duncan, for those who don't know him, he was one of the choreographers on the movie Last Dance. Mm-hmm. And Last Dance. So he and Andy Matran, who's the composer, a dear friend of mine, Andy Matran, who used to do Bozo Circus.
Awesome, yeah.
He was the last composer on that. He put the music together for the finale. But last night we had a viewing at Dovetail Studios up in Albany Park. And I was sitting there, and Randy Duncan at the very end says, "Does anybody have any questions?" And I raised my hand. I was like, "Okay, I have a comment." I was like, "All right, 20 dancers that are all giving of their time were sitting on the floor, panting, breathing heavy, still sweating." And I thought, "Oh, the days! I'm glad I don't do that anymore." But I said, "I just have to share with all 20 of you sitting here. Some of you, the very first time that you're performing in Dance for Life." And you don't know the real reason why it started, but here you are. And if you look around this room, there are 70 people sitting with me over here, and you're sitting there looking at them. Stare at them. Take this in, because there's 40 years of dance history in this room right here. Yeah. 25 years of it with Dance for Life. Even before that, there's a lot of reasons dance exists here in Chicago. I said, you now are part of that fabric of the Chicago dance community.
That's great, yeah.
And you're part of history just by being here tonight and taking part in Dance for Life.
For you, last question, you know, to think about 25 years of being able to put this fund together, to mm-hmm. see the fundraisers run from $250,000 to $300,000 a pop,
right?
To have a fund that can help people with medical bills for life-threatening illnesses like HIV/AIDS, you know, thinking back to those days in the 80s when you lost friends, you know, do you feel that you've done good by them?
Done good by them, for them, while they were here. Try to instill that in the thought processes of the dancers last night at the finale viewing, getting back to the root of why this event started, even though with the advent of PrEP that people can take, of course, HIV is lessening, but still you don't want to get complacent. So one of our board members gave a talk about that last night, connecting them with the real reason that Dance for Life started and why the dance community is so giving, and why they jumped aboard like they did.
Keith Elliott, one of the founders of Dance for Life, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. It's amazing. The fundraiser's at the Auditorium Theater tomorrow night. It's a must-see for the dance community. It's every summer. It's a summer event.
Tickets are still available.
Tickets are still available. It's the Auditorium Theater, Dance for Life. Keith, thanks for so much for coming in tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, so coming up, we're going to Fan Jam the Olympics with Molly Green. And also, I got to read all the great texts I got about duct taping my shoes. We're joking about that. That, you know, that was kind of a throwaway, Pete. We kind of did that at the top of the show. I've never seen in our year's time the lines light up so fast. People really wanted to tell me how to fix my shoe. You know, that's what... Breaking news, Chicago.
What did you pay for these shoes again?
$20.
Come on, man.
22. Maybe, you know what? I might be lying. It might be more like a 25-er.
I like you. I respect you. You're a good broadcaster. What the hell are you doing?
But these are
duct
not,
taping
no,
a $20 pair of
these
shoes.
Are not your, these are not your, your everydays. You know, I've got the shoes I've got on now, which have a huge hole in the back. The boots that I wear in the fall, I got a huge hole in the sole. I've got a lot of shoe problems right now. But the but these were bought pretty much for the idea that when I'm at home, you know, and I walk my son to camp or I'm lounging around in the weekend, that they're just like slip-on, like, boat shoes.
Right.
And I just, I've only had them since June. So the idea being that I just can't go buy another pair when I've only had it for 2 months, man. It's like, it's the dad in me. I can't do it. I'd
See,
rather
kids,
duct tape.
When you go into broadcasting, this is what happens.
You did terrible shoe maintenance.
We can't afford new shoes.
All right. Well, I'll read some. I got some good ones. I have someone who actually called DSW on my behalf tonight. We'll get to that after the news. Yes, it's time. No remake on this one yet. I'm just staying with the classic. Time to Fan Jam the Olympics. The NBC hit Superstore is now on, so that means must mean that the Olympics are over on a Friday night. It's a good show. I'll watch anything Mark McKinney's in, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. Instead, we're talking Olympics. The primetime Olympics are over, and Molly Green, she watched the primetime Olympics so we could do our show, and now she's going to update us. Molly, good to talk to you. You're back.
Hey, Justin, I'm back.
Where were you? You were out of town?
I was in the Florida Keys.
No big deal.
But we watch the Olympics every night.
So. Oh, we could. Yeah, we should have just bothered you on your vacation. We should have.
I actually, my friend that I was with knew that I was doing this, and we kind of like got in the spirit of it, and we were a little like sad every night that you didn't like call us.
We could have used you. We just had dead air. We didn't do anything. We just extended long conversations with artists. All right, so let's talk tonight. What's the biggest story of the night? I think we know since Rob broke in on the disqualification, but what's the overall sort of tone and feeling of tonight's primetime Olympics?
Well, I'm going to say in my feminist Olympics view that the women winning the 4x100 was a bigger story than the men being disqualified.
There you go. So. See, there you go. That seems to be one of the problems with the coverage of the Olympics is that we
hard to not watch it or like react to different stories that have happened without thinking that way, because it's just like that's been kind of the overall thing, is like looking at not only like the feminist perspective on it, but the class perspective on it, and the you know, it's kind of analyzing everything. I think we're in the habit.
Yeah, we are. But you're right. I mean, you know what? Here on the download, we're a glass half full show. So let's start with the winners. So the women's relay, we got gold.
Yeah, and they there was a bit of controversy last night because they had to they dropped the baton, and so they protested and were able to run this on their own, and so they qualified. And when they qualified with the best time.
Yeah, but it's kind of bogus, right, in the sense that they, because they won the – we talked about this last night. Because they won the challenge, they got to do the race on their own, like almost like without all the others. And I feel like there might be something to having to do it all in once that changes your time, but they got to do it themselves, and they blew everybody away.
I think it could go either way, though. I mean, like, the reason they did it again is because one of the Brazilian runners ran into, ran into Allison Felix, like, went out of her lane.
Unacceptable.
And but I think, like, it could go either way because they were saying that they felt awkward running alone, so.
Yeah, that's true. They're not used to it, right?
Well, they clearly won tonight, and I love that group. I love Tori Bowie. I love Allison Felix. Like, I really enjoyed watching them this week.
I have to say, without you around, Molly, I have lost interest in the Olympics. I don't know any of these names. I don't even know where we're at.
I was waning a bit. It is kind of. I mean, there's still some things to happen. Men's platform diving tomorrow. There's still a few things to be completed.
When did the Olympics end? Did they get one more week?
Sunday is the closing ceremony.
This Sunday.
I'm kind of feeling like the momentum is winding down.
It's because of Ryan Lochte. He blew it for everybody. He ruined the 2016 Rio Olympics. All right, so
I was so obsessed with that, and then now I'm just so like tired of it. Yeah. So really,
I think the media knew that there was some obsession to it, and they went overboard.
They didn't bring it up tonight, and that's like kind of it's funny because like. The night of the Matt Lauer interview, we swept the 100-meter women's hurdles, and it was like, it was one of those like great moments and a lot of buildup. But then it was really overshadowed just by them talking about the Lochte thing. So.
All right, so tonight again, I mean, the men's team being disqualified seems to overshadow a gold medal for the women in the relay. How is our track and field team done? I mean, are the Americans bringing home a ton of medals when it comes to this part of the Olympics?
They have been, but they haven't won very many golds. And like, so we swept, that was the first sweep when we swept the women's 100-meter hurdle. And then Jamaica has won a lot. We've won some, but the other night we were pretty deep into it and we had won our first gold in track, which was shocking. But then you have, you know, like Ashton Eaton winning last night. So there's been some big wins. They show our medal count and we have like 105 medals and the next people below us, it's like 60 something. So,
yeah. So we are pulling away in the Olympics, overall medal count. Is Eaton the Carl Lewis of the squad? I mean, who are the prime time, runners, sprinters, runners.
Well, he's
of the
decathlete. Yeah. So he's I guess he's the Bruce Jenner of the squad.
Okay.
But I really feel like the women have stood out so much more. They've tried to push the men, but I just feel like Tori Bowie, every time they love to like profile her.
Okay.
And so she's stood out. And, you know, for the men, like they, like there was one night this week where they really focus on this guy who plays football at Oregon. Like a lot of these track stars go to school at Oregon, and this guy also plays football. And they spent a long time like showing the whole football team in like an auditorium watching his event.
Right. They love
that.
He didn't even medal,
and they just kind of like moved on. From there, they're definitely looking for someone.
Right. You'd think they would plan that out a little bit more so there wasn't such disappointment. So it's probably better to say there's no Carl Lewis's, but there seems to be a couple FloJo's. We'll take that, right?
Sure.
I mean, I think that the American, the women's team, track and field team has always been strong.
Yeah.
And it seems like that is continuing.
There was a guy, LaShawn Merritt, who he was going for like Carl Lewis-type records. I mean, Usain Bolt, even though he's not American, he's the Carl Lewis.
Yeah, right.
I think tonight tied the amount of gold medals that Carl, 9 gold medals.
Is he just, I honestly have missed, because we've been doing shows all week, I've missed the Olympics. I mean, is he just blowing everybody away?
He's amazing.
Yeah, is he just like, it's almost like Katie Ledecky on the track?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. Like that far ahead. His strides are so long. He's just, it's not, ironically, it's not a race. Like, it's him way ahead and then everyone else behind him. So I guess we saw his last race, a last Olympic race tonight.
Until next time. He'll come back. All right. So
I was thinking he's so dominant. I can't imagine him.
Yeah.
I just don't think he wants to train this hard.
Yeah, right.
Anymore.
Right.
We'll see. Yeah.
Okay. So all that's really left, I mean, the basketball team, I guess, is going to play its gold medal game. The women's basketball team as well, right? Tomorrow.
Right. There's volleyball bronze medal games.
Okay.
Which was kind of shocking that the women didn't make it to the gold. That was sort of a big, when Serbia beat them, that's been a big story. Women's water polo, they won gold today.
Okay.
And there's no more beach volleyball.
I know,
thank
that was
goodness.
A tough one.
It would come on every night, and my friend and I would just like, we would both in like synchronize sighs when it would come on again.
I missed.
It was kind of exciting, but still.
Missed the final. Did the U.S. get bronze at least?
Yeah, they won bronze.
All right, well, that's good.
Which is pretty exciting. But
yeah.
It seemed to almost mean more to them for it not to, like, Carrie Walsh Jennings' husband made some comment about, like, it was their gold medal to just go pick up, and then they lost.
That's his fault. All right, so, all that's left now, platform diving, essentially, is and a couple of big gold medals. But do we have any shot of doing anything in diving? I mean, is that something that the U.S. I know Greg Louganis, but that's about it.
Yeah, David Bodaya is the
who?
David Bodaya.
Okay.
He's where we started out the week.
Yeah,
with
right,
him
right, right.
And Steele Johnson and their synchronized
right.
springboard, synchronized platform. But he was it was the prelims tonight. He won gold in London, so he's a defending gold medalist. Okay. So he qualified. I think he was like fourth or fifth. But Tom Daley, who I mentioned, looks like he's adorable and looks like he could be in, like, One Direction or something like that. And he's a big star in England. He finished in the first place in the prelim. So he was sort of one of the big stories of the night.
Are you at the point where you're going to skip the weekend stuff? Are you done with it? Or are you going to stick with it and finish it out till Sunday?
Well, I think because it's going to rain tomorrow, I'll probably watch more Olympics. It was beautiful out. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of interested in the diving. I'm not really interested in the basketball. I don't know.
Basketball's hard. I think the U.S., you don't get too much, like, World Cup fever around the basketball because it's all NBA guys that we're going to watch in 2 months anyway, or a month at this point. Molly, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, finish.
I was going to say that one thing about watching this in Florida was that Danelle Leyva, who's the American gymnast who medaled, he's from Miami, and so I was kind of like getting into him being like my hometown athlete.
Connor Dwyer's there. Out.
He was my Connor Dwyer of vacation. Dwyer. So it continued.
All right. Molly, it was a pleasure having you fan-jam the Olympics.
Thanks,
and thanks for coming back to finish it out for us and give us an idea of what's happening with track and field. Molly Green, thank you so much.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. I'm going through the text right now about my duct-taped shoe. It's almost to the end here. It's so funny. Like, I had to reboot. There's been so many.
It's crazy.
708 says, so just to follow up, I mean, because it's been a couple hours now. We started the show kind of on a joke, and I was explaining how I'm really frustrated with this pair of shoes that I bought. In June, I bought a pair of boat shoes. They were canvas. They're canvas. They're not real. They're just like almost canvas slippers.
Mm-hmm.
They're blue with a white sole. And I noticed that, and it was particularly after it was my son had a birthday party, and I had to do a lot of the cleanup and stuff, and it was a water party in July, and it was, and I got them really wet.
Mm.
I think I really wet. And so the next, like when they dried and we went out again, I realized that the top of them, where my toes are, it split the canvas, so my toe sticks out, my big toe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have, like, you know, jagged toenails or something like that. So it was just annoying that it's now, and it just keeps getting bigger. So it's like this hole where the big toe is, like a sock. But it's a shoe, and it's a top of it, and it's really, it's obnoxious. And I've caught a couple people when I'm hanging out, mostly the people who come fix my washer and dryer, looking at my shoes, right? They look down like, hey, hobo. I didn't know we were fixing a hobo's washer and dryer. So what I did is I was at the Target, and I went to the artisan aisle where they do the glitter and the glue sticks and stuff, and I found some duct tape, and they had a roll of duct tape that was very expensive, $7, $8. But it matched, the color matched the shoe because it was a blue shoe. It's a little bit off, but I figured because the shoe is dirty. So I duct taped the top, just that top.
Yeah.
And I wore it yesterday to the Cubs game, like all the way through it. I went all the way to there, then I walked, did the whole thing. And, you know, my wife recognized it right away, like, what are you doing? She's like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, I duct taped it. She's like, you know, you're probably calling more attention to it, you know, because the shade's a little off. I didn't say I was perfect. So that was the idea. But I'm like, no, it's good. And it lasted. Now, today, when I put them on to, you know, go out this morning, the tape is loose. Mm-hmm. I have to replace it. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be, you know, I'll probably get too lazy to do that. 331 told me, no, Gorilla Tape works best. I don't even know what that is, but I did see that there.
I think, yeah, I've seen commercials for that with a big gorilla handing people tape. And I was like, what is this? What is this?
224 says Flex Seal works great on waterproofing shoes. Yeah, that wasn't. Regarding your boat shoes, 708 says, just how low are the salaries at WGN? They're pretty low.
Don't you think when you buy these shoes for $20, $25, you know that you're going to get a summer on?
Just a summer. Yeah. I just want a summer. And I bought them late. That's what kills me. Like, I bought them late. I bought them in June. It's June, August. 2 months.
June, July, August.
They shouldn't be this. I don't expect them to be. I expect them to maybe make it through the winter, like being put away in a closet, and then you pull them out, and you're like, oh, and then you realize by the next June, like, these are not going to make it. But I expect one season. And I'm not, like, I'm not going hard. I'm not like, hey, let me get a quick game of tennis in with these things. I mean, it's essentially shuffling. It's shuffling and driving places. Going into a coffee shop going, can I get a nice coffee? Should not have a hole in my shoe.
Do you think the wetness when you got them all wet, that contributed to the...
I think that's going to ruin. So 773 says, come on, man, you're not working minimum wage. Just go buy some new shoes. Hey, don't tell me what to do with my
life. Rob Martier.
That was Martier. 224 says, go full on, wear grocery bags over your shoes. 815 said, tape from the inside. My dad, 630 says, my dad does it all the time. Then he sprays paint to tape them to match the shoe. That's a great idea.
That's a good idea, yeah.
He says, for gym shoes. Someone is price comparison duct tape.
Yeah.
I got duct tape cheaper at this store. Well, good. Good. I don't know what to tell you. Liquid Nails, 708 says, Liquid Nails.
Sure what that is.
815, again, comparison shopping. I love that, like, I bring up, like, I just throw out how much money I spent on this, and everyone's like, well, you can get it better at, if you go to Ace, you can get it better. You're probably right.
Where do you go to Nordstrom? Buy your duct tape?
You know, I'm fancy. I said it earlier this week. I'm fancy. I like it. I'm an Oak Street duct tape guy, you know? Sue me. My 89-year-old uncle used to do the same thing to his slippers. See? We're in 708.
What is that? Is that texter making fun of you because his uncle is 89?
Maybe.
And you're 40 doing the same, treating your shoes the same way?
773 says, duct tape's awesome.
That's it?
You can use it for everything. You can put it on a wart and a wart will disappear. Well, okay, great. That's good to know. In this situation... This person says 6630 says buy the same shoe and return the bad shoes. But I get it. I get the concept that I can walk into DSW and be like, hey, these didn't work out. But the problem is that they are not new. They're 2 months of really kind of like, you know, going through the wet and everything. So they're dirty. So I can't throw them up on the thing and be like, look what happened here. I mean, I could. I've done that before.
Yeah.
I did that at Sears one time and Sears just looked at me like I was a total ass.
As a former shoe store employee, we would look at them. We would look at them to see what kind of like the soles, what kind of wear and tear the soles had, and like, oh yeah, you really haven't worn these that much this probably should have lasted. We'd give you a new pair, probably.
I didn't know you were a Sears guy.
It was a Foot Locker.
I did know that. Did you have to wear the referee shirt?
Absolutely.
Hey, guys, can I help you? Did you act like a ref? Did you act like you were in a city? You have to blow the whistle? You're like, boop. You know what? Let me take it to the cross.
Special on tube socks. Buy two, get the third one free.
Oh, man, I used to hate when I got on the sales floor because I was just a stock person. But like on the weekends or Christmas, you know, I'd have to get on the sales floor.
And like, Zimmerman, you're in.
Oh,
off the bench.
I'd just be in the T-shirt in the back, and then they call me out, busy, put on the stripes.
You would do this. You would go, we got those in 11. Can I interest you in a Georgetown parka?
Now working kids' shoes, Pete Zimmerman.
They used to put sales pressure on me for, you know, like doing the accessories, sell the polish, sell the socks. I hated it.
At the Foot Locker way up on the top, right, on the car, they'd have like the parkas, like you could get like the cool looking.
Absolutely.
They're mostly like college football.
Did everything, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Starter jackets.
Like starter jacket. That's what it was. Yeah. That was my favorite. Oh, maybe I'll get a pair of shoes and I'll get a Kentucky Wildcat starter jacket.
I totally empathize with Pete, though, during my days at the walking company.
Oh, yeah.
It was the worst because management would tell you to bring out all the extra crap.
Yeah.
And then people sitting there, you would see the look on their face going, why didn't this guy just bring out the pair of shoes that I want to try on? I had the shoe ointment. I had the brush. I had the Nubuck thing. I had the eraser. You know, and then you had to go through this whole freaking spiel of how to take care of these damn shoes, especially when management was there. But otherwise, you'd get in trouble.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like, dude, they don't want the Nubuck brush. They just want the shoes.
Can I offer you some leather protection?
Or even if they wanted the shoe, like we had, like if they wanted, you know, you got the new Jordans in, 11. You go out and no Jordans anywhere because they're all sold out. You bring out an Air Force One. Yeah, no. What about these Air Force One?
I got it.
I don't
want the pump.
All right, we'll end it here. 847. 847 says to me, Justin, I called DSW at Clark and Diversey. I spoke to Mandy, the manager, and she said they'd have to take a look at the shoes so they can make a decision how much wear and tear. I didn't give any names. I just love that they're doing that on behalf. It's almost like we should do like prank, like Jerky Boys, like have the two DSWs talk to each other. Hey, that's all. Thank you so much, 847, for calling on my behalf.
When you go in there tomorrow, they're like, did you call yesterday?
Is Mandy around? Hey, Mandy, what do you think of these boat shoes? You sound Liz like someone who called.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot.
Oh, I love that sound. It's time to put Steve Gadlin's Shark Tank, Steve Gadlin, into the frying pan. Gadlin, of course, the brains behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Yeah. There we go. Let that simmer. Let it fry. Before he gets into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Of course, he gives us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Cuban. Steve Gadlin will be joining us momentarily here on the frying pan, so we just let that frying sound get into your eardrums. Yeah, we like it. 312-981-7200. That's the number tonight. And we feel like Steve's going to have some good ideas tonight because he's been texting me all week about some of the he really wants to get it right. And I think that if we think about the way that Steve has delivered here on the frying pan throughout the last year, probably 50, 60 different ideas, you know, I'm sure he would like some of those back. That's probably the best way to say it. But tonight I have good feeling. Right now we're trying to get him on the line. Maybe he didn't have a good idea and he decided to bolt. We'll check.
with Steve. But I'm excited. I think he's got an idea, and I think he's going to win. And I know that you're already texting in about it, so you're excited to hear from him. 312-981-7200. Yeah, he's not coming through, huh? I mean, it's a lax Friday night, but he should be answering his phone. All right, we'll get back to Steve. The Cubs and the Rockies, of course, playing rain delayed. They're starting this game now, which is, I don't know, an hour after they were supposed to. Is it raining in Denver? I think it is, right?
Yeah, and I saw that the temperature at game time, or earlier when the game time was supposed to start, the game was supposed to start, was at 54 degrees.
Jeez, in Denver right now?
Yeah.
Because of what? Because of the... Because
Denver.
This is in August, isn't it? Interesting. The calculator's already given up a run. That's not good for his Cy Young bid.
I don't see him as a... I mean, he's having a good second half or a good, you know, good season, but he's got seven losses. I don't know. It's just, he's like 9-7.
You're a Cubs guy. Are you concerned about John Lackey?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it, but, you know, they have enough depth.
I mean, because they got him for the playoff run, right? I mean, they got him essentially to be that third starter that they didn't have last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so playing now doesn't matter. They can Scottie Pippen him.
Yeah.
And everyone knows in Chicago, oh, my back. You know?
Yeah.
My back starts hurting around February, March.
Right.
You know, and then it sits until April. And he's like, oh, I think it's okay for the game one of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
And, you know, I guess it's different now, too, in that... You know, Hamill was having a horrible second half last year. Now he's arguably the best pitcher. You know, he's like, he's unconscious this last, you know, eight games.
It's pretty amazing.
So, I mean, he could be, he's probably their best starter right now.
Yeah, and he seems, I didn't know he was so tall, to be honest with you. Like,
six, six.
I didn't pay that close attention. I just watched him because he's been having such a tremendous run. Better, some say better than Kyle Hendricks. His ERA, yeah. I think it really is like one.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how tall and sort of intimidating he is as a pitcher. He seems to have better stuff in terms of explosive stuff than Hendricks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? He was hurt at the end of last year, too. That contributed to his lack of performance. But so now, you know, the Lackey injury, you know, stinks. But, you know, if they had to put in the Hendricks or Hamill as a third person, you know, I have no, you know, Lackey's probably their fifth guy right now.
Yeah, right.
You know.
But then again, that's now.
He's a great, you know, he's done and he's won two World Series, so it's good to have a guy like that, you know.
But I mean, again, I mean, you don't expect, you didn't pick up John Lackey to pitch in August. You picked him in October. So, like, regardless of him having sort of being the fifth starter at this point, it doesn't really matter. You might as well take the opportunity, put him on the DL, let him rest so he's fresh because he's going to have to pitch till November.
Yeah. As he said, he didn't come here for a haircut. He came here for the jewelry.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
He didn't come here for a haircut?
Yeah.
Is Chicago known for its haircuts? Is that a saying in the South?
I guess one of his buddies says that, like, wherever he's from, Abilene or whatever, so he stole it at a press conference.
You know what this? I didn't come here for a haircut. No, we weren't offering. I don't know what to tell you. Nobody really calls Chicago out as the haircut capital of the world.
Jason Hamill must have been very upset to learn that Pearl Jam, you know, they're playing in town this weekend at Wrigley, or like Saturday and Monday, I think. But I think it was getting a flurry of tweets that they were doing a show on top of Murphy's.
Like on the...
On
like,
the roof, like the Beatles.
Now, Murphy's on top is a rooftop, like bleachers.
Yeah, guess they moved the bleacher. I saw a picture from, it looked like somebody was taking it from, I don't know, the L or...
So they were doing that, they play Wrigley tomorrow and they did that tonight?
Yeah, because Eddie Vedder's been at all, you know, he was at the game
Is
yesterday.
It like an acoustic game kind of thing? Or acoustic...
Yeah, and it looks like they were filming it, so I don't know if it was something they were, you know, shooting a video or doing something, but yeah, there was like a tons of tweets about how Pearl Jam, and there was a huge crowd like outside of Murphy's right on Sheffield there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been up there. We went up there for WGN.
Yeah.
That was on top of Murphy's.
Yep.
And there's it's amazing to me. I'd never been on a rooftop. And we went up there for an outing for WGN last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how designed it was. You know, like you get up there and there's a bar and then there's a place for food. Then there's it just felt very organized and professional as opposed to here's some rickety bleachers and
oh yeah, that's
make your way up there.
Yeah, a couple of nights ago, or I guess the last couple of weekends, there have been two Sunday night games, and they do the ubiquitous look inside the rooftops, like let's take you on a tour, and they open the it's just the cameras going up the stairs, and then they take you in. Like these things are like amazing, they're furnished, the top quality bars, and they kind of made it seem like they were still apartments, but really it's just all.
But that's the one thing that's a somewhat manipulation in the way that everybody and around the world thinks that. You know, the rooftops across the way are just, they're just on top of apartments. They're so passionate.
Yeah,
like,
right.
These are
like
huge
like in the
industries.
80s when they were, when they were. Just
Ryan Sandberg and Steve Trout say, hey, what are they doing up there? Are they sitting up there in a lawn chair? What's Grandpa doing up there? That's not what it's like anymore. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll see if we can get Steve Gadlin on the line. If we can't, you know what? We'll do something else.
People want to talk about your shoes.
Guess it's the dog days of summer, Pete. Two Fridays in a row that we get some no-show. Steve Gadlin, who is one of the more reliable guests we have on this program with the frying pan. He's done so many different Friday nights where he's brought us inventions, innovations. He's definitely not one that shies away from an open mic. Is not answering his phone.
Hope he's okay.
I hope he's okay, too. That's a good point. We hope he's okay. We are going to get a candlelight vigil going in outside the studio to make sure he's okay. My guess is he just fell asleep, or maybe he is scared of download. Maybe he finally got fed up. Maybe he was like, you know what? Maybe the last couple of weeks of his vacation have been fake. Maybe it's forged. Maybe he's afraid of coming on here and getting beat up like he always does, and he just doesn't know how to let us down.
He doesn't take criticism too well from the GN audience. He kind of lashes out,
right? So maybe we finally did it.
We broke him.
630 says maybe he realized how stupid he is and he finally gave it up. Ouch.
Oh no.
I feel like almost like a detective who's figuring it out, like, oh yeah, when you get comments like that, maybe why would you go on the radio? We had a good thing going here.
Yeah.
Maybe I guess it's kind of on me, I think, because I think at the end of the day, I want perfection and I want him to get that brass ring because I think he deserves it. But at the same time, maybe, I encourage too much putting him down from our listeners. Like, I kind of always am like, all right, let's read some of the colorful stuff.
Right. The last segment
got a
is always, just like really nailing them.
So maybe it just got a little out of control for him, and maybe he just doesn't have... maybe just doesn't want to deal with the fact of getting yelled at every Friday night at 10 o'clock. That's too bad.
You foster it a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I did. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. So I kind of take, I feel like maybe I bullied him out. Maybe I was a lead bully, or maybe I was like the behind the scenes. I'm like a Paul Manafort.
It's a passive aggressive thing.
I'm the guy who just like, who gets everybody to the stage. I'm like setup man for the bullies. You know what I mean?
Boy, this
now I'm down on myself because I'm like, maybe... I'm like I've been watching so much Olympics. Maybe I'm like the volleyball guy who sets it, and the Download Nation. They're the ones that spike it in the, the Serbian captain's face.
Hope he doesn't hurt himself, because then you'll be taking a task.
Jeez.
He's been bullied for the last year and a half. Yeah. It finally got to him.
630 says maybe he's hiding for stealing blueprints from a military base. Maybe he's in hiding for stealing blueprints from a military base.
I'm picturing him like in his closet, cowering, not able to answer his phone.
I picture him right now with the radio on, with a pillow over his face, because he decided to reach. He probably reached out to a confidant right before the segment started, and they were like, "That's a terrible idea." And so he didn't know how to get out of it, so he put the pillow over his face, so he's listening to us. He's listening to the stuff that's coming in, and he's cringing. That's what I picture. There's also the theory that he's just asleep.
I did see him tweet a couple of hours ago how he just picked up some New Glarus Spotted Cow beer from Wisconsin. So, so you know, Friday night after a long week of work, have a couple of, you know, Spotted Cows. Kind of just drift, watch, get the Cub game on, waiting for your radio segment to start where you're a star, where we put you on a pedestal for an hour.
And just... until the last 10 minutes. Yeah. Then you lose it. It's happened to the best. It's happened to none of us, but it's, I was going to say the best of us, but to the guys who work at night, it does not happen that way. Well, you know, I mean, I'd love to have his new idea. I'm sure it's good, but I also know that, you know, maybe he needs a, maybe he's crisp. Maybe he's burnt. You know, he had his 2 weeks off. Maybe that was part of it. He just needs to get rehabilitated. 870 says, we don't have time for it. I said, maybe it's time for a new weekly segment. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some ideas on the bench, you know. Now, you know what I think we should do to cheer Steve up? I think we should text and call for the rest of the show. This is my idea for how we can fill the time. The best Steve Gadlin ideas that you liked, right? Someone just texted in and said, unmeltable ice cream.
That was a good one.
Right? They're all coming in now.
God, he's had so many good ones.
Yeah. Mine was, so that's what it says. So 847 says, maybe his phone's not working. 773 says, by the way, Justin, I don't think anyone's missing him. 724, this is a good one. You like. Steve was kidnapped on his way to Invention Hell. 815, maybe CP3P got him. Oh, my gosh. These are good.
But I really think I was one of Steve's, you must admit,
yeah.
I was one of his biggest advocates. I supported him.
Yeah,
more
he loved
often
you.
Than not.
He really thought you to be a father figure.
I mean, I bought into a lot of his stuff.
630 says, Steve is gone, so it's safe to come back on Friday nights? Oh, that's so mean. Come on. Perhaps you should combine bourbon sampling with the inventions.
Well, I endorse that.
Oh, 630. 630 goes even deeper, going, good thing he's gone. Maybe next you'll realize how much we don't like you, as in me, Justin.
Wow.
Wow. So like,
holy moly.
So they're like, it's not enough. They killed off Gadlin, and now they're like, they could smell the weakness. They could see the water, the blood in the water, and they're like, go for it. All 4 hours.
They've been waiting.
They've been waiting.
Listening 3.5 hours to shoot that text off.
630 says Quack Pack was the best. I don't even remember what Quack Pack was.
No, I don't either. I'm going to have to go to the archives and look at some of the...
Yeah, that's what we'll do in the break. We'll grab the archives and we'll do a reminiscence. It'll be the... it's almost like a living wake for Steve Gadlin, who did not show up tonight for the frying pan. 630 says, oh, we love Steve.
There we
hope
go.
He comes back. So there we go. So yeah. It's almost like Steve Gadlin has become the frying pan idea for this week. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Of course, if you're just tuning in, this is the Friday night hour where we usually do the frying pan with Steve Gadlin, where he is a local innovator, an inventor, who gives us his ideas before he brings them to Mark Cuban. But tonight, Steve Gadlin just didn't show up. It's 2 weeks in a row. We had the band Parliament Funkadelic, members of the band, last week, if you remember that, for the film festival. There was a documentary about the band. They were supposed to come in. They just didn't even show. No call, nothing. I was like, what? And then tonight, Steve Gadlin repeats the performance, which is strange. Steve is a very reliable guy. So we kind of joke about it. We hope everything's okay.
Yeah.
Obviously. But in the meantime, we thought we were trying to figure out what we would want to talk about instead. But, you know, we thought maybe doing an homage to Steve Gadlin and sort of texting in our favorite moments from the frying pan past might be a good idea. And it seems to work. I got a tremendous amount of texts already. And we can read them and kind of go out. And Pete has gone ahead and he has got some of the ideas I mean, because I was thinking about this. I'm like, you know, he's been on essentially straight through from April of the year before to now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's had some days off of Blackhawks games and vacations, but I would say 50 plus ideas.
Got a lot of them. The yeah. ham hamburger.
The ham hamburger.
I think that was a chunk of ham.
Right, like a hamburger.
Mm-hmm. But
going back to its roots, to its history, and there was a lot of argument in that segment about whether or not the roots were from Hamburg or if ham, the actual meat, ham, was at the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Steve argued for ham. The rest of us argued for history. How the story actually goes. All right, let's see what else we got here. 630, what I loved is that all his ideas are Bluetooth compatible.
Oh, yeah.
That is true.
That's but, genius.
Yep. 630 says, we love Steve. Okay. 630 says, you know what had the best idea? The exploding pinata.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, it's difficult to hit the pinata, so you would have an explosive device yeah. in the middle. And when you hit it, it would explode, and the candy would just shoot out
mm-hmm.
like 100 feet. There are a yeah. lot of concerns about the kids that would be in the surrounding area. And Steve ultimately didn't have, maybe he didn't have the answers to it. 630 says he was kidnapped by a master gardener.
We have a master gardener. He got into it with a master gardener, as right. I recall.
He did.
Because that was the, it was like the rainbow.
It was a rainbow mulch. It yeah. was called like rainbow grass or mm-hmm. something. And a master gardener called in. And he made the mistake of saying, "Oh, I'm sorry. Anyone
insulting.
Can be a master." He's yeah. like, "Anyone can be. I'm a master inventor."
Yeah,
not realizing that it was a you know something that people studied.
Yeah,
for. So he got a lot of flack. The next 15 callers were master gardeners mad at him.
The person that's like in charge of our garden, where we you know do our stuff, is a master gardener. And lets everybody know it.
Really?
Yeah. Also, I never mentioned this, but a few weeks back. When it was a thing, we got an email saying that our garden plots, a lot of them have been ruined because people are in there playing Pokemon Go.
What?
Yeah, they're like traipsing through the garden and stepping on stuff.
Really? Anyway. That's funny. You got to put up like little stakes for Pokemon Go, just like you do for rabbits.
Yeah, right.
Maybe spray everything with cayenne pepper, and then the kids are like, "Oh, there's so much pepper over here. I'm not playing Pokemon Go." 815 said maybe he couldn't find any new chemicals that children under 10 couldn't consume.
What about the ketchup flavored ice cream?
That was a good one. Yeah.
Because
to help kids eat better.
Yeah, because they don't. You buy them hot dog and fries, but they don't want to eat the hot dog and fries. They want to go right to the ice cream.
So what if you made it? Flavored.
Yeah. Lately.
A lot of food stuff here. 815 says he's late because he's waiting on the Uber umbrella. That was...
Uberella, I believe.
Uberella.
Yeah.
Where you could have somebody come and bring you an umbrella when it's raining.
This is what I like. I like the time cap. Remember that one? It's like it's a cap long, and then the time is on the bill. It's like reflected on the bill, so you don't have to look down and like grab
your
phone.
If you grab your phone, you can just look at the bill of your hat, right?
Hmm.
606 says maybe it's like Back to the Future. Maybe the Iranians got involved. 630 says I just started a Steve Gadlin tribute band called Digital Whisperers. 815's favorite idea was a library where you could take out your own books and then pay a fee to check them out and read them. That's true. I forgot the name of that. But it would be like almost like a storage unit for your books, and then there'd be a fee to take them out.
What about a little invention called the cobby?
That
was a reusable corn cob. You never waste a corn cob. The cobby.
These are fun. 312-981-7200. I spoke to him an hour ago. This is 708. He was testing his latest improvement to the colorful raccoon mulch. Or maybe he developed the Gatlin Burger, a high-velocity sandwich delivery system. There was a malfunction. 606 says maybe frying pan guy, Steve, was attacked by a roll of blue duct tape. It's tied up right now, bringing it all together.
I want to go back to one that I really like, the ham burger.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the like 22-inch thick piece of ham?
That's right. There was a big argument about the history, yeah.
I wholeheartedly endorse that one.
I thought the one I like a lot is the, I can't remember the cute names, but the one where it was a flash bomb and you would roll it out and it would like light everything up for selfies in dark rooms. So you would roll it out and like in a movie theater and it would make a big light, like a 5-second light. So you could take a selfie in a dark room. Obviously that one didn't work out.
It was called the photobomb.
Photobomb.
Yeah.
Right. I like that one.
Invention to help you take the perfect selfie.
773 says, frying pan is the hands down the best hour on WGN radio. Steve is truly a genius. We love the cobby. 773 wants to know, what was the original Bluetooth connected device? Probably was the Uberella. I think that was his first one, wasn't it? I feel like Uberella was one of the first ones.
I'm having trouble going all the way back. I have stink alert from last, like, May. I don't even remember what stink alert was.
773 says, I blame Bush and Obama for Steve's worthless government phone. That's not answering tonight. 630 says, George Lucas disappeared Steve for copyright infringement. He had a big fight over what copywriting means. My complete list of his favorite inventions, tonight's disappearing act. 847 asks a legitimate question. Do you guys know of any of Steve's pitches that have actually been accepted by Mark Cuban? No, none of them have. Because I don't think that Steve has ever pitched any of the ideas. I think he's waiting for the one that's going to work because I don't, you know, to be honest, when you have a development deal, it's not like you have a running, you know, sort of text chain. You have two meetings a year where you get to pitch something and the idea being that, you know, you want to pitch the right thing. So I think a lot of times he's not going to do stuff that gets ridiculed. 724, my favorite moment was at the end of the show when Steve would say goodnight. 708, his best show, this one, because he's not here. Oh, come on. 312, yeah.
What about the, this was a good one as somebody who goes out to dinner, the me first, where it was you were able to put yourself first in line at a restaurant. You get to jump the line.
It was like it short-circuited the those things,
right? Yeah.
The things that you would hand out, and then it would go off because you would have to me first. You'd hit the button, and you would jump to the front of the line.
Yeah, it was genius.
It was genius. And what I love about Steve's ideas is they're really fraught with intense debate and discussion about how not only is it technically possible, but if it's ethically possible. Like, there was a tremendous outbreak. I remember, like, an outburst of people who was just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? You're jumping in front of other people. Like, it was just great. It's like he brings so much to the discussion beyond just the technological capabilities. 630, my favorite was the bulk banana peeler with long blades, safe for children. That was a good one. There's so many great ones.
Yeah. I think probably the people that aren't happy are those, you know, the elderly that are over 40. The elderly people that are over 40.
They just, they're not the target audience for Steve Gadlin. All right, well, you know what? We'll find where he's at. I got to say, disappointed that he didn't show up. But at the same time, I hope he's okay. And we'll get it figured out this week. And we'll get him back for next week. I think that's probably all we can really do. Patty Vasquez coming up next here on the download. All right. 773 says, just read on DNA Info that an inventor was electrocuted trying to a new invention to connect a 220 volt to his Bluetooth. Hopefully he walked off the end of Navy Pier with his latest invention, concrete slippers. Come on. You guys are so mean. I am thoroughly entertained by Steve. I think he brings ideas. He brings interesting things for us to talk about. 773 says, I wanted to feel good about myself by listening to Justin read rejection texts on Steve ideas. Now I have nothing. It's true. You feel hollow. You know, this is an introspective moment. Maybe we needed this moment as almost an intervention to ourselves. You know, where we're like, you know what? Maybe we should stop being like everybody on the internet. And, you know, almost like the opposite of the real world.
Positive reinforcement, more positive.
630 says Steve is a genius. Yeah, it's just like the idea that, you know, the real world, you say, like, when things stop getting start getting interesting, get real, whatever it is, you know. Ours the other way around. When things get real, and now they're too real. That's the frying pan. All right, Fatty Vasquez coming up next. Next week on the program, I'm looking forward to the weekend, I'll tell you that. It's nice to have a couple of days off. Dr. Raul Carre is going to be here. He's an old friend of mine. He's used to be the director of the emergency room at Northwestern. And he's going to come in because I've wanted to talk to him for a while. We haven't had a chance to catch up since in the last year because he's been busy. He opened his own urgent care facility. But I thought the two things I'd be interested to talk to him about is what Eitan and Martha were talking about tonight, the idea of insurance companies and the Affordable Care Act, but also about Zika, West Nile. He's, you know, I talked to him a lot during the Ebola craze. And he did a really good job of putting it in perspective. And I would like to hear that same perspective when it comes to the Zika virus, when it comes to when we have these outbreaks in our country of something new and the CDC and seems like every mainstream newspaper, you know, calls for the end of days. So we'll talk with Dr. Carre coming up on Monday, along with Doug Plank, who's here every Monday. Avery Young, great performer. The comedians Garfunkel and Oates, they're great. You can see them all over the place. They're going to join us. They got a show coming up. Philanthropist J.B. Pritzker. Yeah. Going to sit down at the big table in studio, talk to J.B. Pritzker about what it means to be a philanthropist here in Chicago. Talk about his contributions to the city. Also, Jason Chan, chef. We did a big table with him about a year ago. That was great. He's back in town. He actually went out to L.A. to open a sushi restaurant. So we'll talk to him. He's back in town just for a couple weeks. Richard Tanney's going to join us. He's the writer and director of South Side with You, the new Barack Obama, Michelle Obama first date movie. Richard Roper gave it a nice review today. Oh, on Row, yeah.
Great.
I thought, again, I'm not a film reviewer. I say this all the time, but I saw it. I thought it was great. I thought it was refreshing. It was a perfect way to say it. I should have said that to the company. Refreshing, Justin Kaufman, WGN Radio. Roller coaster ride. But what I really like about it is it really is just a first date. You know, it's a play. It's more like a play that's set in Chicago in 1989. And very interesting. It's just a courtship. You know, Barack Obama trying to convince Michelle Robinson that he's worthy. And it's kind of fun to watch, knowing what we know now. And they stay out of the politics. So anyone who doesn't like Barack Obama's politics is not about that. It's an interesting movie. I really enjoyed it.
Can't wait.
So that'll be coming up. Abraham Levitan will be back. We'll talk Nerds on Tour. Picnic, of course. Wayne Messmer is going to be on the show. How great is that? Wayne Messmer. I just saw Wayne. He just did the national anthem at the game.
He's the best.
Yeah. I'd love to. He's going to sit down at the big table. That's great. He's a great, great career. Can't wait to talk to him. Eric Williams, who owns Silver Room in Hyde Park, the Silver Room block party that just happened. We got another big event coming up.
Huge.
Can't wait to talk with him. Randy Bellisomo from WGN TV News will be here. So there's a lot going on next week.
What I saw on the, and I know Rob's up there, so maybe he can fill me in on what I saw on the WGN News this morning. I was watching, you know, I love WGN News. I watch it all day long,
yeah, right.
You know. And so in between the 11 o'clock news and the noon news, you know, they were running a promo for the 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock news. There's a lot of news. Right. And the Tom Nevigan, I guess, was the one doing the promo. And he's like, you know, coming up later on WGN News from 4 to 6, we'll have breaking news. That's what he said. He said, at 4 to 6, we're going to have breaking news.
So they already know it's going to be breaking.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was a weird little promo.
Huh.
Well, I mean, if you look at CNN... Yeah, they're constantly always, in a breaking news mode.
Right, right.
Fox does a similar sort of setup where it's always a Fox News alert.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got that cool graphic that kind of comes across the screen with the boom, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I found it funny that they were promoting breaking news, but not a story that, you know. I mean, like I understand. News. It's like if there's breaking news, we're going to be over it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they would say coming up at 4 to 6, sports and weather.
Yeah, yeah, that's
true. You know,
true.
I mean, it's become a category.
But see, breaking implies is that, it's just happened.
Yeah.
Right, so you get that. I guess they could just say, coming up 4 to 6, you know, the latest.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Unless, I don't know, I mean, up there at Bradley Place, maybe they operate like the Minority Report. Maybe they know something, like the pre-cops.
Right.
They know something
they're
we don't.
Yep, they're pre-news.
Yeah. They've got them in that little bathtub in the back there.
That's why they're number one.
And then the ball comes rolling down. You got Mike and Mateer standing over there.
There's an accident on Pulaski.
There's Skilling going, uh-oh, we got to get him out there. We got breaking news. Get the preview going, guys. And then all of a sudden the precogs start twitching. You know.
All right. There we go. That's good stuff.
Man. Roan jumps in the pool to get him out. Everybody's in it.
Everybody's in it. That would be, I think we just, if we have any extra time on our hands, we should do the video for them. A little internet video for a news. That's perfect. Yeah. Minority Report set up for a local news team.
Sapelsa could be the Mark or the Tom Cruise character.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
See, there's so much to do there. Such a good. That. All right. We'll in our spare time, we'll pitch WGN TV our idea, a Martyr production. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Rob Martyr, have a great weekend.
I've got breaking news for Monday. Please be sure to tune in.
With all the breaking news you can handle Monday. That's good stuff.